Yeah.
And you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions.
We're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
What's going on, everybody? This is Michael.
Holy cow.
I can't believe it, man. Sound Sessions is live on WGN Radio, AM 720. What's going on, Kevin?
Not much. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing great. How could I not be doing great, man? We are sitting here at the seats we've been looking at for so long.
Yeah, what a surreal moment this is. For those who don't know, Michael and I have been at WGN Radio here for what? I mean, I interned in 2010, I believe.
I was kind of the same way. I started maybe 3.5, almost 4 years ago, and, you know, just crawled my way like a little baby to the top ranks here. And this is fantastic, man. I couldn't be more
at home. Yeah, what an honor. And, you know, and it's funny, too. I was telling Shantae, our producer. Hi, Shantae, by the way. Thank you so much. And hi, Roger.
Hey, guys. Good to see you.
Great to see you, Roger.
We are thrilled to be here. So, I was telling Shantae off the air, you know, I used to produce Matt Bubala, and that was one of my first producer gigs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you kind of work your way up, yada, yada, yada. Did Dean. Now I'm producing Bill and Wendy. You produced The Business Lunch.
That's right, with the man, Steve Bertrand, who is now in Prague. And he sent us a text message
what a wishing guy.
Us good luck. I know, what a fantastic guy. And I was the same way. I started interning with Pete and Scott Miller
right.
here at GN. And now, you know, this same exact time slot, and now it's all come full circle. I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and so why we got called in to do this today is... like Michael introduced us as, we started a podcast called Sound Sessions for WGNplus.com. We do long-form artist interviews for music. We talk gear. We talk festivals. We've got giveaways. We're just kind of music junkies, and this is kind of a fun outlet for us to talk about it, you know?
Yeah, we're your earbuds.
Yeah, we're your earbuds.
Basically. Yeah, and these are great intimate interviews with bands that are coming through Chicago. Everyone from Victor Wooten to the band Gwar to people like Thrice, a lot of deep cuts, as well as well-known acts like Thundercat and Butch Vig, who is actually kind enough to join us tonight.
Yeah. So we're going to be having that later, and that's kind of just an example of what we do, so we're definitely looking forward to sharing that with you. And with Matt Bubala, if Matt Bubala is listening, he should still be awake. I know he was at the Guns N' Roses concert. Mm-hmm. If any of you were at the Guns N' Roses concert, please call in 312-981-7200. Let us know about the show. How did it go? Did you guys have a good time? I mean, I'm sure it was a blast.
I've been seeing people walk down Michigan Avenue all night in their decked out Guns N' Roses t-shirts and everything.
No sleeves.
Like
it's got to be no sleeves.
There's
right?
no sleeves. There's jean jackets. There's cut off jean shorts. I mean, anything goes with this band.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, call in with that. We're psyched to hear it. We have a lot of awesome music content today. We got live music in the studio. We got that Butch Vig interview. We're talking about a really special Chicago music shop. We have a lot of fun stuff coming up. I'm really excited.
That's right. And, you know, if you wanted to reach out to us at any time, you can always call 981-7200. That's the 312 area code.
You can text that same line.
Exactly. Or if you want to reach out to Sound Sessions, which is our music podcast, you can find us on Facebook. You can email us at soundsessionspod@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram, which is blowing up all over the place. We love interacting with people. And that's the way that you're able to get these ticket giveaways that we have. We have tickets to give away to Pitchfork Media Festival. Can you believe it?
Yeah, which is like, that used to be my favorite festival. And it's just, you know, it's so funny how it's come full circle now. We're giving away tickets. Now.
I know. And we have Brian Wilson playing Pet Sounds in full Saturday.
Yeah, that's going to be – and that's what, July 14th – I'm sorry, 15th through 17th, I believe, is the date for that.
Exactly.
So, let's get all the plugs out of the way. Yeah, you can find us on Instagram, Sound Sessions WGN. We're on Twitter, at Sound Sesh Pod. Shoot us a line. You can email us, soundsessionpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, WGNplus.com. You can find us on let's set things up a little bit more here, Michael. I want to get into your musical history a little bit, just to kind of give people an insight to why it is we kind of got involved in this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, when I was young, I grew up always listening to records with my dad. I mean, it came from him showing me Beatles books to Cat Stevens records on the old, scratch-up record player.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just through there that he bought me my first guitar, and I started getting bands here in the city and here back in the suburbs and everything. Haven't really stopped then. I know you have a very similar music
similar
start.
But different. Yeah, same thing. Like, my parents were very different in the sense that I was raised on Saturday mornings, the walls would be shaking with scorpions from my dad. That's his, like, that was his thing back in the day. And then Sundays were cleanup mode with mom. We'd clean the house and she'd put on Bob Marley.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a great combo. And yeah, ever since then, I've just really been enthralled in music. I'm a musician myself. I know you play music as well.
Yes. And, you know, to be honest, it was this opportunity to work in radio, you know, that really shines through with this passion of music, because here we got the opportunity to speak to artists who are coming through Chicago and everything.
Yeah, and that's actually a credit to management here, mm-hmm. Jimmy DeCastro, Todd Manley, Stephanie Mendendez, for giving us the opportunity to really kind of pursue our passion here. And it's really been a treat. I mean, we're honored and we're extremely lucky, I think, to be doing what we're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that we were able to sit in these seats, the seats that we've been watching and, you know, being so admirable about for all these years.
Well, let's talk about that too for a second. How funny is it? How weird does it feel? I'm used to being in Shantae's position right now behind the glass. Mm-hmm. And now here I am in the captain's chair. It feels weird.
Yeah. Like, let's give them a little bit behind the scenes, I guess, for everybody who's listening right now.
Oh, so, yeah. We have all the secrets. If you want to know about Steve Bertrand, we'll just, all the skeletons in his closet.
Exactly. Anybody you want to know here at the station, just you call us up and we will let you know. But, like, here's the thing that really got to me was when I came here, I got here maybe 3 hours early. I put on my most comfy clothes, and I started going to town printing out articles, printing out things that we should do, which is we usually do for prep for the show for our
hosts.
And
meanwhile, full disclosure, you text me when you got here. Hey, Kev, you here? That was me crawling out of bed. Sorry.
Kevin.
I know. I'm sorry.
Of all nights to show up late. It would be tonight.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the cool thing about, you know, being a producer, because now we're producing ourselves, which seems to be a little bit interesting. And so when we get started, we do the printouts, we get the logs, and which is all the commercial breaks and the live reads that we have. We set them up. And to be able to do it for myself now has just been the strangest but most awesome thing ever.
Building on that, too, is having someone help us with that, Shantae, the producer, great producer, helping us out with all that stuff. It's a weird feeling, just a really bizarre feeling having someone help us out with our own show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. It's much appreciated.
Yeah, and then, you know what, the another thing is, the thing that the producer does is book guests. So when we had to book guests on the fly, it was kind of interesting to say, you know, hey, instead of, can I get you on the Wintrust Business Lunch, which is every day from 12 to 1,
right?
I was saying, hey, can I get you on the Sound Session show here on WGN from 2 to 5 in the morning? And they thought, what time is it again?
That's always the line. Yeah. Excuse me, what?
Mm-hmm. So I couldn't be happier to be here. Again, thank you to all the management who have kind of guided us. They've held us our hands and mentored us over the years. Everybody's so great. I mean, everybody from Dave Marzullo to Dave Plyer, who we both worked with.
Yeah, yeah. Dave Plyer was also, he was one of my first shifts. He was my very first shift. Oh, my God, what a story that was. First shift ever was Christmas Day into the day after, overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, when you first start, you get the shifts that nobody wants, right? So it was my first shift ever, and it was Dave's first shift ever. And maybe some people even remember this. It was a few years back. But boy, I had no idea what I was doing, and it didn't help that it was his first shift also, so things just did not go well. But you have to have those moments, you know, to kind of figure out what you're doing. And you know, fast forward, now I produce Bill and Wendy, and, you know, you're hearing us on the air today, and it's just a really funny, surreal thing, and we're just geeked to be here.
It's totally geeked, and, you know, it was through learning with people like Dave Plyer, who is such a great host, who does such an amazing thing that you kind of learn to hone your craft almost. Do you feel like your craft is honed, Kevin?
What is my craft?
Your craft as a producer and now a host here on WGN Radio.
Is it honed? No, because that's like an unending just process. It's like riding the dragon.
It is. It's you're constantly chasing this.
Yeah, sometimes things are great and, you know, you're on the upswing, and other times it's like, oh my God, I have no guests. What am I going to do? I'm plummeting, but everything goes well. So,
mm-hmm. So we just wanted to thank everybody who is listening too. I mean, thank you for letting us into your homes, your cars, your computers, and we hope that, you know, you guys are going to have fun with us. It's kind of a more relaxed and upbeat show here at Sound Sessions. If you have any music memories, give us a call. Again, if you were at the Guns N' Roses show, shout out to Matt Bubala, who is out there right now.
I'm sure there are others too, but yeah, that's...
Let us know with your phone calls or text. We couldn't be happier to be here on Sound Sessions, and we are going to just take our first break here, so we'll be back here on WGN Radio.
Okay, welcome back to Sound
Sessions. What's going on, everybody?
On WGN Radio.
So, Kevin...
Yes, sir.
There is a big thing going on this weekend. I don't know if you heard about it, but it is America's birthday. How excited are you
for
this?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely thrilled. There's a lot going on. We're psyched.
July 4th is happening here in Chicago, and the best part about living here in the city is we have so much stuff to do. I mean, there's so many things that are going on. I mean, from the Guns N' Roses show that was tonight.
Also on Sunday, I believe they're playing.
Oh, they're playing on Sunday, too?
Yep,
good
two
for
nights.
Them.
Yep.
But you know what kind of makes me kind of think back on what happens here in Chicago and back in the suburbs with my family is the fact that, you know, you can sit down, enjoy a good barbecue with your family,
yeah.
Enjoy fireworks. What were some of your memories back in the day?
Being totally irresponsible with fireworks. Yeah, you know, it kind of worked out that my family was always out of town when I was later, younger, you know, in college and all that, when they'd be out of town for the 4th of July. So I'd always have my own kind of friends over fling that, yeah, it was, we were young and dumb.
Remember, you got to get away from the firework before the wick ends.
Yes, well, we were doing things, well, I don't even want to get into what we were doing as far as the fireworks goes. We were just not safe, but we kept all our fingers and, you know, everything went well, but we had a good time.
That's all you can really ask for, to be honest. And, you know, I had a great big backyard. That was kind of a tongue twister right there. But the best part about it, it was spending time with your family. And, you know, lo and behold, I have the 4th of July master, the Brat King himself, my own dad, Michael Heidemann, here on the radio. Dad, how's it going today?
Hello, Michael. How you doing?
I am doing so well. It's so good to hear your voice. How is Minnesota? You're on a trip there right now for 4th of July.
Oh,
huh?
Must be nice.
Yes, we are. We're visiting your Aunt Mary and Uncle Dick here in Winona, Minnesota. And you will not believe this, but your mother and I are standing outside in a parking lot because there is no cell service because of the bluffs. So we have been walking around aimlessly looking for signal, and
that's some dedication.
And luckily for us, it's a beautiful night.
Yeah,
that is perfect. That's the good thing about living in Illinois: no bluffs.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that's a good problem to have. That you're wandering trying to find cell service, you can't get it. That's a good thing for a little getaway.
Yeah, we're having a great time.
So, Dad,
I found it fantastic.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to actually hear you because, you know, as we mentioned before, being a music podcast, a lot of the inspiration that I got was with the music that you would play back in the day. Do you remember spending those Cat Stevens records, listening to it jumping around in my underwear and stuff like that when I was young?
We bought a lot of vinyl back in the day, and yes, we had music in the house, and we just enjoyed just kind of kicking back, and we started pretty mellow, though. We weren't, I don't think I have any Guns N' Roses.
No Scorpions, Dad?
No, I don't even know what that is. Oh, well, I know what it is, but I don't want to think about musically how that connects. But remember, Mike, we would go to Milwaukee for Summerfest during the 4th of July. And if you can think back, we went to a Red Hot Chili Pepper concert.
Cool.
On 4th of July.
I do remember that.
And who was the warm-up band?
The warm-up band back then, believe it or not, I remember this like it was yesterday, it was the Foo Fighters. And,
wow.
And let me tell you, that was probably the last tour that the Foo Fighters could open up for another band.
Yeah, what a lineup that was.
Oh, that was a great time. This was back in 1998. This is a long time ago, and you were just a young lad, and it was pouring rain.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a downpour, and of course your father is as conservative and as frugal as I am. We bought bleacher seats, and they were not covered. But as resourceful as we are, we kind of left the usher to his own, and we went to different seats. And we just kind of got in and sat under the pavilion and just listened to one of the best concerts I've ever heard.
That was a great 4th
of
July.
What a cool memory that is.
Yeah, I know.
You know. You and your dad, that's awesome.
And, you know, actually, I need to give kudos to my dad. He was the one who taught me that there is no rules at concerts, and if you want to sneak around, you can be happy to do so.
Get
so thank
different
you.
Sections and all that.
Exactly. you know, we wanted to invite listeners to call in, too. If you guys have great 4th of July memories, we'd love to hear them.
I really liked the idea that your dad just brought up, like the idea of going to a concert with your dad or your mother.
Yeah.
What a cool thing. If you got a fond memory of that, please call in.
Absolutely.
Well, we had our whole family. We had little Adam was with us, and Mom was with us. There was four of us. We just we all snuck together.
A family that sneaks together stays together. That's what they say. Yeah. Well, Dad, I can't thank you enough. It's so good to hear from you. I hope you and Mom are having a good time, and little Adam is doing well listening in McHenry, too. So, you know, a lot of my inspiration comes from you, so I'm glad, and I'm glad you're having a great time this 4th of July. Thank you for everything.
Well, we're having a great time, and we have to be careful, though. We might have security come out here in this parking lot. You've got two grown people just standing in the middle of this dark, barren place, and...
We don't want to get you in trouble. Maybe we should let you go so we don't get you any
security. Yeah, make sure you get back to your hotel room or something like that. I hope you didn't stray too far away from it.
No, we're good. We're good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dad.
Love you, Mike.
Love you, bye. Too, Dad. Bye-bye.
I wish my dad would call in.
Kevin, you know.
But no, that like stirred up a memory for me thinking about... I was thinking about the first concert I went to with my parents. Mm-hmm. Well, there was always like the B96, you know, those who shall not be mentioned. But yeah, we went to like some summer bashes, and I also remember a Third Eye Blind concert. And this is like seems to be a running thing in sound sessions.
It
for
definitely
us.
Does. And this band keeps following us.
Yeah, well, more so I follow them, I guess. And this must be from where it all stemmed. I was in seventh grade, and we went to a Third Eye Blind concert. It was me, my sister, my dad, and my mom. I want to say it was at the Riv, but I just loved it. It was a blast, and I didn't know what I was getting myself into at the time. My mom has always liked them, and yeah, since then, it's just I'm hooked. I can't not see them, you know, or listen to them.
Isn't that so great how it just sets this seed in your mind going to these concerts with your family, how it kind of just sticks with you? Because I can't think of anything I love more than live music, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think of some other concerts, too. I feel like Train opened that show, funny enough, that Third Eye Blind one. But
That's a solid lineup. No knocking Train. I mean, they're a great band.
No, not at all. But
hey, Soul Sister.
Was there any other concerts you had gone to with your extended family?
Absolutely. My first concert ever, in fact, was spent with my dad, and he drove us down through into Rockford, Illinois. And we mentioned this on the podcast, but I got to say it. No guilty pleasures allowed. My first concert was Weird Al Yankovic, and I could not have loved it more.
There's nothing to be ashamed of about that. That's an awesome first concert.
It was, you know, to be honest, it was one of my favorite times of my life. It was the Bad Hair Day tour. I bought the t-shirt.
Dad
bought the t-shirt.
Do you still have that t-shirt?
I do.
Do you wear it? Because if you don't, I want that.
I'm wearing it right now. Can't you see it? It's on me at this moment. But what's your favorite memory of a concert with your family or something?
Well,
there
was the Third Eye Blind one, but then there was also, and I remember this pretty vividly. So my sister went to Illinois State University at the time, and it was for my 16th birthday. My parents got me tickets to see Queens of the Stone Age open up for, do you remember Zwan?
That was Billy Corgan's
Billy
side
Corgan's
project
other off project, yeah. So it was Queens of the Stone Age opening up for Zwan down at Illinois State University, and I got tickets. And my dad drove me and two of my buddies down to Illinois State University, where we met up with my sister briefly, but then we watched in the Bone Student Center Queens of the Stone Age just kill it. It was a great show. And then I watched a little bit of Zwan, and then we got out of there. It was a school night, so we had to dart back and all that, and... But yeah, I mean, it was just a great show. My dad, I could tell, was a little uncomfortable with the... I mean, he can get into aggressive music.
Yes.
But college kids being, you know, having a little fun on the at a show, they were doing certain things that happen at shows.
What are these things that college kids do?
Funny smells floating around. Mm-hmm. They were doing this right behind us. And I could just... Oh, here we go. Exactly. Queens of the Stone Age. Yep. You know this one.
There we go.
So this is going on, and there's a funny smell floating around.
What's that smell, Kevin?
And then I could just see the discomfort in my dad's face, just like standing like straight still, looking back every once in a while at these kids doing this. And I just knew he was not having a good time.
Kevin, this is not my place that I want to be at the moment. I smell something funny, and someone just passed me a really funny cigarette.
Yes, exactly.
That's great.
But, Roger, I know you're up there.
Yes.
What about you? I'd like to hear about something. Was there ever a time you, with any, either your parents or maybe a sibling or anything that you had gone to a concert with?
Never. Well, when I was very young, my mom, my mother would take me to some concerts, mainly up at Northwestern. We went to a lot of musicals.
Okay.
And the concerts we went to were usually... classical concerts. We had a classical radio station playing a lot in the house, other than WGN playing in the house. When I got older, I started going to, I think my first concert I didn't go to until I was actually in college. Went to SIU Carbondale and saw Chase. From The Tonight Show, band leader from The Tonight Show.
Oh, Doc Severinsen?
Doc Severinsen right, came with his
yeah.
group.
That's fantastic.
And then when I went up by where you were, Illinois State
oh, cool.
University, I was working in radio there, and that's where I met my wife, and we went to a number of shows there. One was Seals and Crofts.
Hey, all right.
So, you know, I'm old school.
No, that's okay.
I did when I was still going to school, but I worked summers and breaks and stuff at the Playboy Hotel downtown Chicago. And one night, I got a phone call from a road manager for Elton John.
Wow.
Who wanted to book some rooms and suites. He was coming in to play some concerts in town. And I booked the rooms, and I got tickets, fifth row center, to an Elton John concert here in Chicago. I think it was at the stadium. This would have been early 70s.
Gee, at his prime, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
How
cool is that?
You know, Roger, you brought up something really important. How awesome of a date night it is to go to a concert. Is there anything better than just a concert and like a dinner or something like that?
No, it's you're right. I mean, it's great because, especially if it's something you both like,
right?
Then it's that shared experience. And it's something you could talk about later. And I know with my wife and I, when we can, we don't necessarily do concerts because, I mean, you know, we're of the age now where if you want to listen to someone, you put the CD in or you pull it up on the internet. But we go to plays and musicals whenever we can. We enjoy that kind of an experience. So it's pretty much the same thing in my mind, and it's great. Yeah, sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, we're running late for your news already almost.
No, please.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll throw it to Roger. He's got some stories for you. WGN, Sound Sessions on WGN. All right, before we go up to Roger, we do have a quick call on the line, so let's see if we can help Matthew. Apparently has a question about an artist. Hey, Matthew, thank you for calling in.
Hey, it's a good segue into me because it's old school.
Okay.
And
we like it.
Well, your dad... Both of your dads had quite an array of musical tastes, and you guys got to admit, doesn't Summerfest really have it down to a science?
Summerfest, you know? Oh my God, their lineup every year is just so spot on. So many different artists and genres covered. It's great.
And
I saw in the past years. Did you guys ever remember a band Indigenous?
I'm not too familiar with them. I don't know about you, Michael.
Are they a Milwaukee band, or where are they from?
No, they're from out in the Southwest.
Okay.
And real heavy instrumental. And
cool.
That was awesome. Yeah, I saw them on public TV, and then I had to see them when I... And that's a great thing that Summerfest does. We saw Jeff Beck there.
Oh man.
That guy's so talented. Yeah.
A legend.
You know, and on the free stages, Robin Trower.
Oh,
Matthew, you are speaking our language right now. And you know the cool thing about Summerfest, too, is that you can lay down a picnic blanket. You can sit there on the benches and just enjoy great food on the water, too, and check it out. So thank you so much for the call, Matthew. This was fantastic.
Do you guys know what Robin Trower is up to? Is he touring, or maybe he's in bad health?
I haven't heard anything about him touring. I want to say he's still around somewhere, but I don't know too much, unfortunately.
Yeah, we saw him up there in 2006.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew. Holiday. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. Sound Sessions on WGN.
There we go. Rock and roll. Hey, welcome back, guys. This is Michael and Kevin Richter here on Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. Just wanted to get through some text really quick. Thank you to 630. Great dynamic, you two.
Oh, how nice of her.
I like this one, too, from 620. You guys were high-fiving each other after you went to that first
break. Oh, yeah,
break,
I responded to that one. Yes, we definitely were. After that first break, for sure.
High-fives are some of my favorite things to do. Great. What's up to Dominic from Franklin Park? And then we had this amazing story from Dominic who said he took his mom on the topic of concerts with your parents. He took his mom to a Poplar Creek show to see Heart. And during the concert, I guess his mom was passed a joint. And his mom actually smokes cigarettes, so she went to go and thank the guy.
Oh, my God.
Took three tokes and then said, oh, it must be a European cigarette because it tasted so bad. And then, well, at the end of that concert, three songs in, she had he had to walk her out because she wanted Superdog so bad.
Oh, I wonder why that is. So
well,
funny.
Great. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for texting in. Keep doing that throughout the night. We're going to be taking them all night long.
So, Michael, we are thrilled. We have two guests from, well, we've had them on Sound Sessions before, a couple of friends of ours, Michael Thomas and Danny Kolasik of the band Corral, local Chicago band. What's up, guys?
Hello.
Hello. Thank you. Welcome.
I love that story from Dominic about corralling.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Dominic's mom was definitely corralling.
Yeah.
So what's going on, guys? You said, Danny, you just came from a local DIY show, yeah?
Yeah, I was over at the dojo.
And we want to talk about that in a little bit.
It was a blast, man. It was Latino night tonight, like Latino culture celebration. Mostly like just showcasing artists in the neighborhood. It's in Pilsen and like on the edge of Little Village and stuff. So it was just like Latino people of color. Like there was a drum circle going on with some singing going on.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Night. People selling artwork upstairs in the gallery. There was a showing room in the back. There was like a potluck thing going on.
Wow.
My friend Palma's brother came. He's been living in Paraguay for a while. And he had like this crazy enchilada recipe
that he had.
So he was making everybody enchiladas. Like I'd never seen somebody so frantically making
enchiladas. Dominic.
It was crazy.
I think Dominic, Texter Dominic's mom would have a good time at this.
Absolutely.
This
She'd be all into that. You know, that's the cool thing about Chicago though, right guys? I mean, the fact that we have such a community-based concert scene. So when you're going to these concerts, people are making enchiladas. They're networking. They're doing all these things. It's not just a concert you're seeing. You're seeing your friends, which is so cool.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was so much fun. It was definitely very communal. And just the music was like, God, these conga players. And oh my God, it was like unreal. I was in another world.
Well, let's get back to you guys first here. So let's talk about Corral. What's going on with Corral? For the listeners and then the people that are streaming, yada, yada. What is Corral? Who is Corral?
I mean, if you break it down to its original seedlings, I'd say Corral is Danny Kolasik, the guy sitting to my right, and he just needed some people to corral with him, so that's kind of where I came in. And then we have a drummer named JP Zygmunt, who couldn't be here, but that's like what Corral is now.
But yeah,
I mean, it ebbs and flows. Who's to say that this is it's not the first form of Corral? This may not
sure.
be the final form. I think it's leaving our marks on it as we come.
Corral is a music-making entity of Chicago.
What kind of music are we talking here?
We play experimental hard rock music with like emo and grunge influences.
Yeah, and we're going to hear a couple different samples coming up here in a bit.
We have some new songs to play for you tonight.
Ooh, that's awesome. Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
We're going to be playing a brand new song.
You know, guys, we were actually talking about the fact that, you know, we're music guys. We wanted to know what were some of your early concert memories with your family or whatnot, or even 4th of July. What have you guys been up to?
My and it's perfect because they just released a new album yesterday. But my first concert ever was Blink 182, and Alkaline Trio opened up for them. And in
Dang.
The middle of that, I believe it was Saves the Day in Newfound Glory.
Was that at Summerfest?
I don't know if it was Summerfest. It was out in the burbs, though, in Tinley Park.
Okay, it was in Tinley Park. Because that was one of my first, too. I remember that concert. The Pop Disaster Tour. Yeah. It's so great. What do you think of that new album?
Yeah, I was just going
to
say.
I'm digging it, to be honest.
We just jammed it all day.
We've been jamming it all day. I mean, it's hard. You know, being from Chicago, especially, Matt Skiba is playing with Blink-182. So
yeah.
It's like taking two things that I love and putting it together and... You're not going to love that, too.
It's like the perfect banana split in every single way. How about you?
What about you, Danny?
We were actually just talking about this in the green room. That's funny that you bring this up. My first concert was Warped Tour 06.
Okay.
And the first shows that I saw were Hello Goodbye,
Nice. I remember them.
Which was like when that EP was out at the time. So they were playing like Touchdown Turnaround and yeah. like stuff like that.
They toured with that EP for a good 5 years.
It was crazy.
It was four songs that they toured with for
when
5 years.
You tap into it, you just milk it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, my hat's off to them. If you can milk a four-song EP for five years.
5 years, right.
The second one was, or that same day, was Gym Class Heroes, which was super fun. That was
those guys were great. I saw them at a Warped Tour too, probably the same one. And I was blown away by them.
It was like 11 a.m.
right. Like, but you were so young and like so geeked about being there. Yeah, that's so funny. Let's talk. So Mike mentioned corralling around. What is that? Corralling.
I mean, corralling can be whatever you want it to be.
It's not just a band name, is it?
No, it's anything really. You know,
we use it interchangeably for all words.
it could be used however you want. And you can take it and put it to any situation you want. I usually apply it to good things. I enjoy corralling.
Yeah.
In any sense of the word. And even when I'm corralling at a lower level, it's still a good time.
Corralling is togetherness. Corralling right. is communicative. It is, you know, community.
I like that.
Yeah. It's much like the Eskimos who have so many words for snow. It's just corralling can mean pretty much anything, and there's different layers of it as well.
I like that.
I remember mm-hmm. being in the South in Atlanta, like if you wanted pop or soda, it was Coke.
Right, always Coke. It's so Coke. Similar concept yeah, there? Same. Okay, yeah. So can you corral a Coke?
Yeah, why not? Okay. I mean, you could be having a Coke while you're corralling.
Right.
There you go.
So what's coming up for you guys?
Studio again.
Yeah?
We decided to take our – we were going to make another EP entitled Leche. I think we were talking about that last time we were here. So we've since then decided, because we've been cranking out more songs, let's make it a full length. We've yet to do a full length as a band. We've just been putting out singles and like 3-song EPs, 5-song EPs. So it's time to like – It's like nut up or shut up.
Yeah, why can't we? Right. You know,
Are you guys up for giving us a little taste right now of one of the songs?
Sure, yeah, let's do it.
Mike, you want to give that mic a little?
Oh yeah,
Michael, give that mic. Perfect. And I'm gonna mess around with some live reverb here. So let's see how this goes.
This one's called
Slang.
Slang. All right.
Yeah, this one's brand new.
Speed. I run on caffeine.
Wow.
That was
excellent.
Great, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, so we are Sound Sessions here with Corral. We're going to take a quick break. More from Michael and myself and Michael Thomas and Danny Kolasik from Corral next. Thank you for listening to Sound Sessions. All right, welcome back to Sound Sessions on WGN. We are here hanging with Corral, and I think you guys have another one for us, right?
We should do.
Excellent, excellent.
Whenever you're ready, guys.
So this song is called The Drop. And this is Corral. Great job.
Thanks.
That was awesome.
Man, I feel so corrally.
Yeah, I feel like we were corralling.
It's so good, so good. Well, you know, I love the fact that we're actually able to get text messages right now because everyone is just still flooding in with their favorite memories. Cookie, thank you for sharing your 1966, 67, and 68 Fifth Dimension at Chicago State Fair. That is dedication to that band.
Wow.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for calling. Guys, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Where's your next show at?
Where is our next show at?
We had a show booked, and then it filled up, and we weren't on the bill.
Mm-hmm. I know how it goes.
Right now, it's just, we really just like making songs and recording them. And I love playing shows, but we've come to find with Corral, we can crank these songs out pretty easily. And that's not in like a...
No, it's... If you have that connection.
Like, it just seems to just, like, today we learned a new one. And yep. It's just, like, we just want to keep recording them and to just not stop doing that. And the shows are kind of sparse, but I think that makes it a little bit more special. I mean, we're not going anywhere. Like, when you see us, we're in Chicago. So, you know, catch us when we're around. Like, we kind of just do it because we love it, ultimately.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, for selfish reasons, like, we enjoy it for that. And, like, when we do share it with others, it's special because it's something that's very special to us, I think.
Well, you just mentioned, you know, you're around Chicago and all that. We kind of want to get into, like, some of Chicago local music scene and other things, like, sure. Favorites and best ofs. But we have Ben on the line. You guys want to throw your headphones on?
Yeah.
It sounds like he's got another music story to share. If we're all Please. Corralling, let's have Ben corral with us.
Ben, welcome welcome to the show. Good to hear from you, man.
Hi.
What's up, Ben?
Thanks for put me on.
Absolutely.
So I had a pretty cool music experience that I thought I would share, where I'm a physicist. Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
Okay.
So I was listening to the like Loveless by My Bloody Valentine. Mm-hmm. And then something about the music and like, I was, like, hanging out, like, feeling good with some friends.
Sure.
And something about the, the music and, like, how we were just, like, hanging out. Like, have you ever seen that Google program where it, like, starts off as quarks and then you can, like, zoom out until you see, like, galaxies?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, one of those played very distinctly in my mind.
Oh.
Actually, I figured out something about my dark matter research.
Sounds like you were corralling pretty hard there, Ben.
Oh, yeah. I was 10 out of 10 corralling.
well, thanks for listening and thanks for calling in there, Ben.
That's the beauty.
Oh, no problem.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ben. That's the beauty of music. It can really just unlock certain secrets in your mind, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, so that was fun. Thank you, Ben. So, guys, yeah, let's talk about some Chicago music or the Chicago local music scene favorites. And I want to hear from you, Michael, also. And if you guys are up for it, maybe we'll keep you around for an extra segment. I don't know.
Definitely.
But what do you guys think? So what's, like, favorite Chicago venue?
Oh, man. I love seeing shows at Lincoln Hall.
Mm-hmm. Lincoln Hall's great.
Because it just sounds so good.
Yeah, they do it right there.
But, I mean, I really love playing Quenchers. Because
I love Quenchers.
It's down the street from my house, so you can just walk.
Right. And the Tater Tot Pizza.
The popcorn with
the hot
sauce.
And that's at Fullerton and Western, right?
Yeah, Fullerton and Western. You guys ever do popcorn with hot sauce? People are looking at me like,
wow.
I like it, but it gets soggy. That's the only downside.
Soggy. I don't know, man.
That's my thing with cereal and milk, but people seem to do that.
That's a little county fair for me. I don't know.
Well, I love it. Keep doing it, Quenchers.
That's so cool. What about you, Danny?
I got mad love for the dojo.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the dojo a little bit more. So this is like a DIY local kind
of... Yeah, it's like an art collective run by a few of my friends. And it's an art collective. It's a venue. It's like it's a media entity. Like they do dojo radio and things of that nature. And like videos and things like that.
But yeah.
It's just, it's a venue where people can come and display their artwork and sell their artwork.
And it's not really necessarily like advertised, you know, is that right? It's, you kind of have to be in the know or you have to like be part of a Facebook group or something for it.
Right. It's like a text for the address kind of.
Sure. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a thing.
Nice.
Makes you feel cool going there.
What about you, Michael? What's a Chicago local favorite venue wise for you?
So I'm going to put this out there and tell me if I'm wrong here. I'm going to say that the best Chicago venue In my opinion, is the Empty Bottle, conversely with the Double Door. Those would be my spots to play if I wanted to, like, you know, get more started in a band and to book my first few shows.
Yeah.
I love those venues. The fact that you can they tie in that great bar scene that's right in the middle of the venue and it just stretches out like that. The way that it's set up is so great to see a show. Even if it sounds bad, it still sounds good. I mean, am I right?
Right. Empty Bottle's great, especially those free shows on Mondays.
Yeah,
you can just
they have
go,
free
and
shows.
It's, like, it's not just a free show because it's some hack bands. Like, it's legit. I've seen some amazing shows there.
Yeah, absolutely.
They posted that they had, in 2000, they had the White Stripes there, like when they were just getting their start. So the fact that we live in Chicago and are able to see these amazing acts at these very, very small, intimate venues, oh, man, I thank God every single day for it. How about you, Kev? What's your favorite spot?
I think Lincoln Hall is definitely my favorite. And also, talking about the Double Door, let's hope we don't lose it. I know there's an eviction thing battle going on. That's a shame. So, but, yeah, and that's like a Chicago staple. It's been around forever.
I feel like there's a petition that's going around now to save the Double
Sign
Door.
It. Sign it.
Yep. Sign it the minute that you can.
Cookie from 262 Cookie says Go-Go's at the Vic, so apparently Cookie is a Vic fan.
I was about to say, the Vic.
The Vic's great, yeah. Vic and the Riff, they kind of have a similar feel to
me. I feel
like
we have to mention the Metro.
I was just going to bring that up, yeah.
That's a great spot. I saw Caribou there last spring, and it was like one of the greatest shows I've ever been to in my life.
And that's like, that venue, it's like not too big, not too small. You know what I mean? It's like just the right size.
But do they have air conditioning at that place? Because they like have like 14 fans set up around the venue, and that's the only like the bad thing about it. It gets so hot there.
Yeah, great spot for sure. Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We'll throw it up to Roger for news after that, and we'll come back for a little bit more local music talk. What do you think?
That sounds great.
You are listening to Sound Sessions live on WGN Radio. I am Kevin.
And what's up? I'm Michael.
And we have plenty more next. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. That's RJD2, who we recently interviewed, actually.
That's
right. We caught him at the Metro. Great show.
You can actually catch all of those interviews on WGNplus.com, or you can go on iTunes, search Sound Sessions WGN. You'll be able to find great acts like RJD2, Victor Wooten, Corral, who we have a long-form interview with.
Thanks for hanging out, guys.
Yeah, that was like an hour-long interview. It was like a total hangout session.
Around with some good people. Sessions can just keep going.
And Roger stepped away. I was going to bring up the Green Mill. Either of you guys ever been there?
No, what's up?
I don't think I have.
The Green Mill, it's a jazz club up in like the north side, like uptown area. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's like Capone used to frequent it.
I heard that, and listeners, please tell us if we're wrong, but I heard that Al Capone had a table in the back that he could look at both exits if he needed to have the cops come that he used to hang out with.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's the cool thing about Chicago. There's some kind of folklore to every single venue that we have. And hey, why don't we just dive into you talking about the best venues here in the city?
Yeah. Well, that's what we were doing. We were wrapping up the venue talk. What about for you guys, who's your favorite, like, other than yourselves, local act?
I really like, there's an instrumental group called Zayas.
Zayas are great.
Oh, man.
Zayas are really great.
They've been putting out a couple EPs over the last few years, and I'm really into them.
I know you could find them. Fan. You can find them on Spotify, I know. You can find them on, like, Bandcamp and other things like that. They're on Facebook. Great instrumental rock band.
They were in that movie, too, Dr. Zayas.
See, I don't know what that is, and I've seen that before. That must be where they got their name, but yeah, I'm not too familiar with it.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. There's also this other instrumental band, Fade. I'm a big fan of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, Fade is so good. They're doing huge things.
It's like a full 360 audio-visual experience. They got projections and yada, yada, yada.
And if you want to look back, you can go back to Matt Pubala's podcast to hear that. It's Fade with two A's.
Two A's.
And you can check them out all over the city.
Yeah, I heard they're very handsome, too.
They're good-looking young men. That aren't me. Danny, what about you? Who's a local act you're a fan of?
I really like Highness right now. It's like this all-female, like,
oh, that's
R&B,
cool.
like, hip-hop group.
Right on.
They're fantastic. Their keyboard player is an animal, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
We got some visitors.
What about Santa? I know, Mike, you're good friends. And these guys are kind of doing big things.
That's the thing. They walk the line.
I was going to say, can you consider them a local act still?
I mean, they definitely have their roots sown in Chicago and Illinois. I mean, they got started down at U of I when they were all going to school in Champaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then all still continue to play here in Chicago. But, yeah, they're doing big things. They're on that line of, like, you know, get that one
They're playing festivals. And
yeah.
You can go to that national level very
How early. Do they deliver all the toys to the kids, though, in one night?
The time zones really come into play.
And that's another interview that is featured on the Sound Sessions WGN Plus.
That's right, where you have Santa. You know, have you guys ever heard of this band called The Kickback that's doing some big things?
No, the Kickback.
What are they all about?
Funny enough, Danny, The Kickback is the practice space right across from our practice space.
Really?
Yes. Oh, no kidding.
See, that's that community-based thing in Chicago.
And even further, Tommy, who plays in Santa, does keys on some of the records.
Look at that.
It's all connected.
Everybody
it's a family.
Practices at Kildare.
Yeah.
I run
Seriously.
Into like everybody.
Mm-hmm. What about Michael? I want to talk to you a little bit because I know you were in a very active band in Atlanta for a while. Can you talk about kind of how scenes like the Chicago local scene compares to other scenes across the country that you may have experience with? What is Chicago doing right? What is Chicago doing wrong? How do we stack up?
It's different. In the sense of the type of music I was around when I was playing in those bands.
Sure.
But I will say, playing in Chicago, you're going to play with good bands every time you play. over the last 6 years since I've been here playing in shows, I can't think of many shows where there haven't been like two or three other just really solid bands on the bill, just doing it the right way. Bands that you want to sit there and enjoy and listen. That's how I found out about Size. Yeah, this is in Chicago. Right. And it's like when I was in Atlanta, I was playing in like kind of like the post-hardcore scene. So you kind of go on tour through the South and you play with some young bands that you're just like, okay.
Sure.
Like that's not, hey, shit, I started it at there.
Yeah,
and
we did that. It's important.
You know, right. Every band was a local band at some point.
That's right. Absolutely. You
know?
That's true.
So go out and support them. You don't know who the next, I heard you guys say Foo Fighters earlier, so that's in my head, but who the next Foo Fighters is going to be, or the next Nirvana.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And if you wanted to hear more about Nirvana, we actually had the guy, we're going to have him on at 4 o'clock. We have Butch Vig, who's joining us today on the show, who produced Nevermind.
Yeah, yeah. That's incredible.
Wow.
He's
calling in. He likes to stay up 24 hours a day. So we thought we'd give him a call in.
He's an active
guy.
Wow,
that's going to be
awesome.
Can we
be here for that?
Like, yeah, of course.
I believe 4:30 a.m. that's happening. Yeah,
that's right.
Butch Vig, so that's going to be cool. Did you wrap up your thought? I'm sorry, Michael.
But Chicago stacks up. I think it's great. It's a very great scene.
It's a music city. There's no doubt about that.
Right. I mean, any night of the week, you can walk into a bar and you're probably going to catch a good show if they have music going.
Which, you know, so many do.
It's kind of like how, you know, it's in Nashville. You just walk down the street, pick a place. It's probably a good band playing.
Right. Yeah.
And that's, it's so true. A lot of my favorite bands that I've seen, you know what was really cool? Talking again about that community kind of feel is when I go out of Chicago or I go to out of state, like to a venue like in Austin, Texas or something like that, which is the first place I saw the Kickback. It's like, you know, a band is from Chicago. They have that good feel. They know how to talk to an audience and everything like
we're
that.
We're proud. We're a proud bunch.
We are. And they always say, they make sure to say they are sending back love from Chicago. Even Kanye West. Like him or hate him, he does say he's from Chicago and these are his roots.
I mean, I think for me speaking, I'm proud to say I'm from Chicago.
Absolutely.
I think you're tough if you can live in Chicago. You get through these winters. I mean,
exactly.
You're tough, but there's like a softness to us as well. Do you know what I mean? Like we're friendly.
You just described Carell. That's our music. We're tough, but it's like, oh, these guys are just kind of like cotton balls.
I thought he was talking about a Charleston Chew for a second. Yeah. Those things are good as well.
What about like a festival, a local festival or anything you guys into?
It's not a local one, but I really like Riot Fest.
Well, let me rephrase, not local, but yeah. I think
it's like Adult Warped Tour for me.
I think Riot Fest, and I have the lineup around here somewhere, but it's, as far as I'm concerned, the most all-encompassing festival there is right now in Chicago. I mean, yeah, Pitchfork's doing their thing, Lollapalooza's doing their thing, but just the diversity in the lineup is just incredible.
Hands down, it's one of the best music festivals that's come around in the last few years. In fact, the headliners are insane. This year, Friday, September 16th is when it starts, goes through the 18th. It has the Flaming Lips, Ween, the Specials, Jimmy Eat World. Like, look at all these throwback bands that they're bringing back.
I mean, yeah, you look at that first day alone, you have metal, you've got hip-hop, you've got you know, indie. It's crazy. You got Morrissey on the second day, Death Cab, Social Distortion, Nas is going to be awesome. Brand New, who I'm seeing tomorrow at Northerly Island Pavilion with Modest Mouse.
And
I cannot wait.
That is going to be the best show. And mic drop, they are just announcing that they are breaking up.
So you told me this. Where did you see this?
I did see this on Consequence of Sound, which is a Chicago-based music article putter outer. But they are doing great things. Like I love the Pitchfork Media, the Consequence of Sounds. These things in Chicago, there's so much music vibration that goes out throughout the rest of the country from this city. But yeah, they are breaking up. Jesse Lacey is calling it quits. What do you think, man?
That sucks.
Mm-hmm. That's a huge bummer.
Yeah, that does suck.
I love that band.
Yeah.
Bummer.
Well, I gotta see them at Riot Fest now.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, this is gonna be your last chance to catch them, I assume, then. And then the biggest news of the festival, as far as I'm concerned, is the original Misfits getting back together and playing on the Sunday.
That's
featuring Glenn Danzig and Jerry Only. And didn't they, like, get in a fight and not like each other or something like that? It's things that rock and rollers do.
What's up with Morrissey, too? I heard that he wasn't even supposed to play. Like, they said that he was going to play, and he's like, I'm not playing.
I heard, same with, because this happened for, I want to say, Mambi at the Beach. They announced that, what's his name from Chicago? Kick Push Guy. Kick.
Oh, Lupe Fiasco.
Lupe, yeah. They, like, announced him, and he tweeted, I'm like, no, I'm not. And that was a huge thing. But with Morrissey, I'm pretty sure he, like, redacted a statement, and he is confirmed.
When I saw them announce Morrissey, I was like, if he shows up.
Yeah, because he recently canceled his Civic Opera House show.
Which, what?
Yeah, that was in 2015 that he just called it quits. It's like everyone bought
Civic
their
Opera House.
Yeah, and he was supposed to play there, so now he's going to play Riot Fest. But that's the cool thing about Riot Fest. It's I feel like this this festival more than any, more than Lollapalooza and anything, has this kind of what am I looking for? Authenticity, where bands can feel comfortable while playing at this festival, which is really cool. That's why they can get Morrissey. That's why they can get NoFX every year and everything like that.
I think it's great too because there's all the headliners, but then get down the bill and there's an awesome upcoming band from Atlanta called Microwave that's going to be playing on Riot Fest Chicago this year. So it's like all these new bands that are coming up, playing with the bands they were probably listening to when they were growing up. So you get all that old school generation fans, all the new school generation fans coming together. So the old school can hear the new stuff, the new school can hear the old stuff, and it's like this great community of...
And a cool thing they did last year, too, I'm not sure if they're doing it this year, but they had like some of these bands playing their classic albums, which was such a cool like trip down memory lane. I loved that.
I love that trend. Like people.
I know. I want it to happen more often. It's really cool. We talked to Thrice the other day, and we brought that up, and they brought up the idea of playing certain albums in its entirety. They couldn't confirm or deny anything, but... They said they had talked about playing the Alchemy Index. I'm not sure if you guys are too familiar, but...
I am.
He said the issue was it was like there'd be so many instruments on stage or something like that because it's a lot of different things going on there.
I just want to hear artists from start to finish.
Man, illusion of safety
for me.
I know. Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back, wrap things up with Corral. You are listening to Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. You can contact us at 312-981-7200. You can text it. You can call it. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. Just check us out on all our social media, Sound Sessions on WGN.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. I'm Michael Heidemann. I'm here with my buddy Kevin Richter and with the band Corral. What's going on, guys? So we were talking about best venues, best local acts that are happening, things to do during the summer, but we kind of want to talk about the fact that this thing has run through a lot of our interviews on Sound Sessions, which is on WGN Plus, and it's the fact that there are no guilty pleasures. Whether it be on songs, whether it be in life, everything happens for a reason, and that's the way it is. So we wanted to get to a lot of our songs here real quick. Now, Kevin, you mentioned a band before that a lot of people could think of as guilty pleasures. In fact,
If I think what you're saying, don't say it.
Well, for one thing, I talked to Kristen Decker today, who's a producer here on WGN, and I said, we were talking about our favorite bands, and I said, Kevin, he's been all about Third Eye Blind for years.
That's not a guilty pleasure.
And
yes,
and she's like, oh yeah, Jumper's cool. And I said,
Decker
is cool.
I'm disappointed in her.
What do you think? What do you guys think it is about the thought of guilty pleasures that people just get so?
Also, if you have any guilty pleasures, text in, call in 312-981-7200. If you're a tough guy and you like metal or you like all the rock and roll, but you secretly like Barry Manilow, let us know.
Ain't nothing wrong with Barry Manilow.
No, nothing.
And that's the point. That's the point. So, guys, talk to us about what do you think your favorite guilty pleasures are? Kevin, I'll kick it to you first because I want to know.
Well,
I know that you have a certain affection for maybe Miss Fergie, too. So,
okay, the song Glamorous by Fergie, you can't deny it. It's just a good song. That's exactly what I'm saying. It's just smooth, and it just makes me feel like a woman in a good way. Do you know what I mean?
It puts you in the mood. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, maybe. But I go as far as to say I have a guilty pleasure playlist where it's just Yeah, like every once in a while I want to hear those... I'm by myself,
Get in the tub.
Get in the tub, have light some candles.
Yeah.
And put on some Bruno Mars. Or here's a really, for some reason, and I think I have a strange crush on her too, Miley Cyrus.
Mm-hmm.
That one's a guilty pleasure.
Old Miley or new Miley?
Both. Okay. And I think it stems from old Miley because she's got a beautiful voice.
Yeah, she
really
does.
But I think her whole image and like wackiness, it's like a media thing, or I'm sorry, a marketing thing, and it's smart and it's working because she's everywhere. But yeah, I really like Miley Cyrus.
Party in the USA, there's nothing wrong with that song. In fact, I think it's one of America's best songs.
The guitar tone on that song is really good. I love the beginning.
The song Adore You, are you familiar? It's got like a piano track behind it. It's just, Michael, why are you laughing?
I'm sorry, I just can't. I'm not a Miley guy. I mean, it's not even...
He's not a Miley guy?
I can't say...
A guy?
A guyly?
But I just love this topic, though. It's great to hear people talk about... Like, especially when you were talking, like, if you're a tough guy, listen to metal. Come on, you know.
Come on.
I'm not going to say in front of... Like, Rihanna is my jam.
Rihanna's great. There's no denying.
I don't even know if it is a guilty
pleasure. It's not.
Pleasure. It just might be a pleasure.
That's Rihanna's. The point. There's no such thing as guilty pleasures. Be proud of what you listen to, you know?
Exactly.
I'm a Backstreet Boy fan.
Okay. Why them and not like NSYNC?
Because you growing up, you know, in the 90s, you picked one.
Star Wars or Star Trek.
I was in the Backstreet Boys camp. And I don't know, my sisters loved it. And I was the youngest boy and I had two older sisters. So it was like, Backstreet's
That song's a cut. I'll give that to you. That's definitely a cut. Michael?
Yeah. You know, I'm a really big fan of none of those bands, but
Burn.
You know, remember when I said that there was no guilty pleasures? I think that you guys feel very guilty about those. In fact, I'm just kidding.
Shame.
No, it's nothing but love here at Sound Sessions. Oh, yeah. So that's what you got to know. My favorite bands, you know, I'm kind of with Roger. I really get into musicals sometimes, and it's just the fact that there's so much crescendo in all that music.
Yeah.
And I'm a big melody based guy. So I mean, even the Beatles wrote musicals. So you can't knock
so
those.
So what's your dorkiest musical?
Oof, man. I don't know if you guys have heard this before, but there's this orphan musical. It's called Annie.
Yeah.
And The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow is one of the saddest songs I've ever heard. So I'd say that's my guilty pleasure. I used to think Weird Al was a guilty pleasure.
No way, man. No,
but
no way.
He like hit this weird kind of just appreciation mode in like 2014 when he came out with that album. And with White and Nerdy and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden it was just like everyone is into Weird Al now. And I'm not the strange one who likes a guy with an accordion. I don't know.
Looks like we have a call, Wayne. We'll put him on in a second here. He's got a guilty pleasure that he wants to share with us. Hey, Wayne, what's your guilty pleasure?
Hey, you know, I'm 51, and so my guilty pleasure is in the opposite direction. I love the sound and Empire of the Sun.
Oh, my God. Good. Wow. That's not guilty. Empire of the Sun's a great band.
Yeah, Wayne. Really,
yeah, but really being an older guy, you know.
You know what? That's even cooler, though. That's even cooler that you're 51 and you are familiar with these like sort of underground electronic bands.
Oh, I absolutely love the sound.
The sounds?
Yeah.
That's excellent, man. You know what? Be proud. Fly your freak flag. Those are not guilty pleasures.
Exactly.
Right. All right. Hey, you guys sound great.
Thank you, Wayne. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate that.
All right, take care.
Bye bye.
Wayne is officially in the Sound Sessions crew.
Yeah, I mean, Wayne's my man. I like Wayne.
That was, you know, that's the thing though. There are so many great bands that are coming out that right now, no matter what your age is, you're able to latch onto these great music that's going on. In fact, you know, let's say it, 2016, the best year for music. What do you think is the best year for music, or the best decade?
God.
I mean, I don't want to throw you this boulder, but here we go.
I'm gonna just. My first thought was like the 70s.
I'm going to go
with Zeppelin right there alone. You get the Stones, you got the Beatles going on.
I think you can go even like 60s because you've got the Beatles. You've got, I think the Who were in that era. Zeppelin got their start then.
Right.
Sabbath was like getting
That's
their start.
Right.
Which is crazy when you think about like you listen to Sabbath and some of these dark, twisted lyrics that were being released. And it was in the 60s. That's not very, like, you know, progressive era necessarily compared to today.
Yeah, I wonder if they were corralling in the 60s. I don't know.
They were definitely corralling in the 60s.
On a whole other level.
I was going to say maybe more so than today.
and the cool thing is, like, the 60s are the best, I feel like, because they led into the 70s. Look at Led Zeppelin and what they did with the melodies of the 1960s. It's so cool what these bands have done. And now, going back today, there's bands like Empire of the Sun that take their like beats and everything from like shoebop music back in the day.
We just got a text from the 563. I am mostly metal/hard stuff, and he's saying things like Six Feet Under, Cadaveria, which I'm not even familiar with, but he says his or her guilty pleasures are ABBA and Meghan Trainor.
Oh my god.
I love that. That's such a contrast
those are
there.
Guilty.
Yeah, ABBA. ABBA's all right.
No.
What's that song? Money, money, money. Oh, must be funny.
ABBA's probably my
in the rich man.
Dancing
world.
Queen?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
I'm not into that one as much.
Ooh. Oh, you can't be shaming us, Kevin.
I'm not. You were shaming
shame.
Us.
Shame.
563. You are again officially in the Sound Sessions
yeah,
crew.
Thank you for sharing. 563. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Beyonce. You can't. I mean, that's not even guilty. She's beautiful. Yeah. She's super talented. And I mean, she's.
I'd say there are some old guilty pleasure Beyonce tracks, though.
I'm Destiny's
sure.
Child.
Meet myself and it's all and like that's like. Like, I'm a strong, independent woman. You know, like,
do you think it goes the opposite way? Like, we're sitting here talking about, like, tough guys listening to pop. Like, people that are solely into pop, but, like, secretly love, like, black death metal.
Oh, see,
yeah.
I would love that. Hear
who's
about
the,
that.
Like, the mom like, out there,
yeah,
you know, the
like
house
listening
mom.
To Norwegian death metal.
Right.
Like Corpse Paint when the kids go to soccer practice.
Right.
Like, cleaning up the house just, like... Doing hair flips.
Yeah, hair flips. Yeah. That's so funny.
He's got like Metalocalypse on or something.
And I'm sure that happens all the time when you need to like kind of hide your metal albums like underneath your covers from your mom.
Right.
It's like no, mom, I'm a pretty princess. Right. I don't want to listen to this Marilyn Manson.
And you know, one of my previous guilty pleasures has become one of my favorites. And he wasn't even that guilty to begin with, but I am now thoroughly obsessed with Drake.
And
you know this about me, I think,
I'm
Michael.
The same.
He's so good.
I hated on Drake at first.
Same.
I got to that Nothing Was the Same album, and I was like, am I not human? Do I not feel things?
I mean, you can't, like, I know you, like, try to fight it, but if it's good, it's good.
I saw this status on Facebook the other day that my friend posted, and I was like, wow, I need to share this. Do I want to listen to Drake and think about you, or listen to Kanye West and think about me? I was like,
so spot on.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. That cuts a few layers deep.
It does cut a few layers
You late
deep.
Night corralers, think about that.
Think about that one.
Speaking of late night corralers, we've got another text from Cookie, who seems to be our number one fan for tonight.
Thanks, Cookie.
The song Felicidad Happiness by Sally Field on the Flying Nun TV show song album, 1967. Again, in the 60s, greatest music ever, even when it comes to the Flying Nun soundtrack.
I just thought of a musical I got into. What was the one with, it was about Argentina. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
I know that.
Evita.
Thank you,
Shantae. The music in that is great.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a part of BA. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
Crickets.
And I love it.
Crickets.
Is John Denver a guilty pleasure?
No.
He's kind of dorky.
No, that's not guilty. Not at all.
You know what? Why don't we throw it up to the man upstairs real quick? Roger, we're talking about guilty pleasures down here, the fact that there are no guilty pleasures. What is your song that we wouldn't expect you to be listening to?
Oh, my gosh. My musical tastes run from A to Z.
That's
seriously.
Awesome.
I have not been able to get into most hip-hop and rap. That's my only fault, I think. In spite of teaching for many, many years at Chicago Vocational, and I have two former students now have their own production studios.
Cool.
And they produce, I think one of them produces some stuff for Common. So I should be more into it or more aware of it, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And I think
There's some stuff I like, but that probably might be my guilty pleasure.
Common? Or Hill? Is that what you're...
Andre 3000.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Roger.
Not guilty at all. That guy's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I think when he's doing his thing, he's one of the best rappers out there, Andre.
He moves so fast and what good style, too.
I know. Yeah. A well-dressed man.
So that would be my guilty pleasure.
That's a good
I think.
One, Roger.
Again, yeah. Roger, no guilty pleasures. We
okay.
love that.
And then from the 773 says Guar and Barbra Streisand.
Yeah.
I love that combo. Well, let's take a quick break here. We'll throw it up to Roger and News after that. Sound Sessions on WGN Radio.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions on WGN. I am Michael Heidemann.
And I am Kevin Richter.
And we're going to just, you know, take a little break from music for a second and go to one of our favorite topics, a topic that everyone needs to know more about, and that is... space travel, Kevin.
Space travel, aliens, all this extraterrestrial activity.
I've always found it so interesting, you know, after seeing Men in Black and all these movies that are coming out. I know ID4 is coming out pretty soon.
I think it's out now.
Oh, it's out now?
Coming out. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Well, what a time to have it. It is UFO Day, World UFO Day, on July 2nd.
Today,
which is
right
today.
Now.
And we have Nick Pope, who ran the British government's UFO project and is now recognized as one of the world's leading experts on UFOs and the unexplained conspiracy theories. Nick, how's it going today?
Fine, thank you very much.
So, Nick, first question, is the truth out there?
Somewhere, yes. And I think whether we'll find it or not, I don't know. But World UFO Day is all about, I suppose, looking up to the skies, looking out for things, and asking those big questions, you know, what is out there?
So, Nick, why July 2nd for World UFO Day?
It's all to do with the infamous Roswell incident in 1947, on or around July the 2nd. No one exactly knows for sure. Something crashed. And I'm actually in Roswell as we speak at a festival called the Roswell Incident. And, you know, this was where something came down in 47 in the desert. The military themselves said, we've recovered one of these flying discs. 24 hours later, they said, sorry, we made a mistake. It was just a weather balloon. But the debate has gone on and on for nearly 70 years.
You know, why would they choose such a lame excuse for a weather balloon? I mean, if it goes from, like, having the biggest news story of all time to just be like, oh, you know, it's nothing. So what are these claims, and could any of them be true?
We'll probably never know for sure. Sadly, of course, pretty much all of the primary witnesses have now passed away, and a lot of the documents went missing years ago. And again, that's given, of course, conspiracy theories.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are, for every UFO sighting, there's probably two or three conspiracy theories. And I think distrust in government goes to the heart of a lot of this. I mean, you know, that was probably true back then. It's certainly true now.
So Michael mentioned that you were involved with the British government's UFO project. What was that all about? And what did you do for them?
Well, I worked for the Ministry of Defense, and here in the States, you had something called Project Blue Book, which was run by the United States Air Force. And I ran the British equivalent. We looked at all the UFO sightings, we investigated them, and, you know, 95% of them did turn out to be misidentifications, hoaxes, that kind of thing. But 5%. Or thereabouts, we couldn't explain. And even us in government said, well, we don't know what we're dealing with here.
That's so interesting.
I'm curious, what about this has enthralled you so much?
Well, I think it is the fact that of all the things we can ask ourselves, questions like, are we alone in the universe? Are we being visited? Those are among the biggest and most profound questions we can ask. And if by celebrating World UFO Day and by looking into this we can get an answer, well, wouldn't that be a great thing? And now, of course, even people like Hillary Clinton and John Podesta are talking about this quite openly.
Yeah. Has any information come out with that at all? I know there was talk of about certain files being released and things like that. Has anything come out?
Not yet, but Hillary Clinton has said that if she's elected, she's certainly going to look into this. And you know, part of this is, I think, motivated by the fact that, of course, politicians know Americans are interested in secret government. And if something's going on, the people want to know whether it turns out to be extraterrestrials or whether it turns out to be some secret prototype spy plane or drone, of course, we don't yet know.
That's so interesting, you know, because she talked about that. I remember listening to that interview, and she said if we can bring up something that, you know, that would help the American people, and or if it really was an alien crash, that'd be good. But then she said, but if it's going to do something with national security, if it's going to affect our national security, she wasn't going to do it. Are these aliens, if they're out there, a threat, and what do they want?
Well, I don't know. If we're being visited, I think it's one of the few assumptions we can legitimately make, that their technology is better than ours. And, mm-hmm. and you know, anyone who can come across the huge distances and come down here to Earth has technology thousands of years ahead of us. And yeah, I think at the very least we've got to say there's a potential threat. But I think when Hillary Clinton was talking about national security, she was probably talking about exemptions to the Freedom of Information Act. And certainly when I handled UFO documents for the British government. We didn't release things if they covered areas such as defense, national security, intelligence, those sorts of areas.
What about these photos that come out every once in a while? You see, like, a body of an alien laying mm-hmm. on a cadaver.
And they always look the same, yeah. too, don't they?
They're always usually just totally fake, correct?
Yes, I'm not convinced by any of those things. I think these days with Photoshop and various other programs, you know, a 12-year-old in his bedroom can probably do a better job than Hollywood producers could do 10 years ago. So, I mean, the technology is just staggering. But I think people in government probably still have the technical ability to sniff out the fakes. Let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. Somewhere out there, there might just be a real photo.
That's very true.
That's the hope, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As I always used to say at the Ministry of Defense, the skeptics have to be right every single day, but the believers only need to be right once.
That's right.
Spot on. You know, I kind of wanted to know your personal experience. Have you ever seen a real UFO?
No, that's the sad irony of this. I investigated hundreds of cases for the British government back in the 90s. Never seen a single thing myself. But, I certainly live in hope. And, who knows? Maybe my day will come.
What about astronauts? You know, every once in a while you hear, like, Neil Armstrong gets asked about his comments and thoughts on this. It seems to be that the common thread is the universe is endless, so if we're the only things out here, that's depressing. I mean, that can't be, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference, of course, between whether there's life out there and whether we're actually being visited. I think NASA and most of the astronauts are probably passionate believers that there's life elsewhere in the universe. I think they're a little bit more skeptical about alien invasion and that kind of thing. But one or two of the astronauts over the years have seen strange things and reported them. Now, you know, most times they've turned out to be the booster rockets falling back to Earth, something quite ordinary. But who knows? Again, it comes back to that point that really it only takes one of these things to be real, and it's the ultimate game changer.
Exactly. You know, we are a music-based podcast as well as hosts here on WGN. And we saw, you know, one of our favorite rockers of all time, the guitarist from Blink-182, Tom DeLonge, actually left the band to continue his search with aliens and stuff like that. What is it about aliens that these skeptics are drawn to when they really have nothing to go on to besides maybe the websites and everything that they have? Is it through experiences or is it just through skepticism and beliefs?
Well, I think it is. Part of it is to do with belief, and this is sometimes being described as a new religion. I think that's a little unfair. I mean, there's actually some pretty good hard evidence for UFOs. Certainly in government case files, we've got these things seen by our own pilots, tracked on military radar. But you raised an interesting point about the musicians and things. And, of course, there's a long track record of musicians who've actually seen UFOs.
Really?
John Lennon, I guess, was probably the most famous one. And he even wrote it, I think, on the edge of one of the records. You know, New York, seen a UFO. Can't remember the date. David Bowie, of course, was absolutely fascinated
yes.
by the subject. Mm-hmm. And there are many, many more.
Hey, Nick, we have a caller that's calling in with a question for you, so we're going to put on Ruth here. Hey, Ruth.
Yes, getting back to Roswell in New Mexico. Now, first of all, you said the government withdrew that information within 24 hours. Was that?
That's correct. First of all, on the front page of the Roswell Daily Record, there was this headline which said that the U.S. military had recovered one of what at the time were called flying discs. We didn't have the term UFO back then. And yes, you're absolutely right. 24 hours later, they said, sorry, horrendous mistake, just a weather balloon.
But I'd always heard, too, because that right there kind of tells you, you know, that was a cover-up. You know, they didn't want to scare the American people. But I've always heard there was these little creatures that kind of had these long faces. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure.
The Roswell, there was like three quote-unquote people in there.
Some people say that there were bodies recovered as well, and there's a story that at least one of them went to the local mortuary. You know, the trouble with all of this, of course, is it's 69 years ago. In fact, today, hence World UFO Day, of course. And so few of the witnesses are around. You know, we're dealing with their kids and their grandkids. So over the decades, memories have faded, records have been lost, and you know, we may never get to the bottom of this mystery.
I want to know if abductions – well, get your thoughts on abductions, if you think that's something that has or could happen, and if so, why?
Well, I guess if we're being visited and if extraterrestrials are, I don't know, taking a close look at planet Earth, just as I suppose we would do. I mean,
right.
You know, when we went to the moon, we picked up rocks and studied things, and I guess if we'd found life, we would have probably scooped it up and stuck it under a microscope or whatever. Maybe they're doing the equivalent to us. Maybe we're this sort of primitive life form to some of these entities out there. I mean, the universe is, what, 14 billion years old.
Right.
You've only got to imagine a civilization with a million years head start on us. And as Arthur C. Clarke, the sci-fi writer and scientist, used to say, any technology sufficiently advanced from our own will be indistinguishable from magic. And
wow.
So, yeah, abductions, who knows?
That's, I think, why we have the iPod today, because there were aliens that came down and just invented that for us.
Hey, Nick, are you okay on time? Can we take a break and come back with more for you?
I'm happy to hang on and chat about this. It's if people are interested to talk, I'm happy to stay.
Excellent. We'll take a quick break here. We're talking with Nick Pope. He ran the British government's UFO project and is now recognized as one of the world's leading experts on UFOs. More with Sound Sessions, Michael and Kevin on WGN.
Oh, that takes me back, man. We're setting the stage. So we're back with Nick Pope, who ran the British government's UFO project and is now recognized as one of the world's leading experts on UFOs. Welcome back, Nick.
Thank you.
So, Nick, I guess a couple questions left here for you. One, I want to know, if they were to come to Earth, do you think it is possible that aliens are among us today?
Well, again, any technology that's thousands, maybe millions of years ahead of us, I don't think things like invisibility, shape-shifting, mind control would necessarily be out of their reach. Again, you know, we've come. Look at us down here. We've come from, what, horse and cart,
mm-hmm,
to
sure.
stealth fighter and space rocket in 200 years. And again, I never say never with any of this. And you know, when skeptics say to me things like, oh, aliens wouldn't do that, and aliens would never do that, I say, well, how the heck do you know?
Right, right.
Exactly. There's a lot to open to interpretation and everything. And speaking of that, I always just want to know, you know, there are things like the pyramids that are made.
Yeah.
And I've seen more than enough shows about the hieroglyphics that have people with outstretched heads who are, like, reaching out to the sky.
There's a lot of interesting stuff out there in art and things like that, yeah.
Exactly. Is that, you know, were they around, these aliens, back when civilization was starting? Do you think that they had a hand in creating the world that we live in today?
Well, I guess this is the newly resurgent ancient astronaut theory, I guess popularized by Eric von Daniken in Chariots mm-hmm. of the Gods, gosh, late 60s. But now, through TV shows like Ancient Aliens, it's really popular again, and the Prometheus movie, I guess, has that idea of the ancient gods returning, maybe. I don't know. I'm actually a great believer in human ingenuity. And, you know, again, although I can't rule that possibility out, I rather like to think that the ancients were smarter than we give them credit for, and maybe we built the pyramids ourselves. I mean, I think when you look at Egyptian society back then, they were far more skilled in things like mathematics, geometry, engineering than we give them credit for. So I'm not a great believer that aliens built the pyramids. I like to think we did it.
So do you think it's just a coincidence then, or people looking way too much into it, that they seem to line up with certain constellations and things like that?
I think there's a human tendency
yeah.
to look for these patterns. It's like seeing, I don't know, the face of Jesus in a slice of toast or something. and there's actually a name for that. It's called pareidolia. It's the tendency to find patterns amongst randomness. And I think we do, as a species, we search for meaning. We look for these things. And if you look hard enough, you'll always find some little synchronicity. And I think sometimes people do read a little bit too much in
sure.
that.
We got a text from the 563, and this kind of goes over my head. I'm not even sure what this is, but they ask, any new information on the Rendlesham incident lately?
Yes, the Rendlesham Forest incident is, I guess, Britain's Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a book on it with two of the witnesses called Encounter in Rendlesham Forest, and it's a staggering case. Even the British government's own file, now declassified under the Freedom of Information Act, talks about, and this was a landing, by the way, not just lights in the sky.
Wow.
Something briefly landed, and when it took off again, the Ministry of Defense, our defense intelligence staff, our scientific and technical intelligence experts, said that radioactivity levels at the landing site were significantly higher than the average background. And that's in our own, you know, file on this incident, not some bogus document floating around a conspiracy theory website.
That's, yeah, wow, really interesting. We touched on it briefly before about these classified files in Roswell, or I guess the Rendlesham incident and things like that being released and the freedom of information. Hillary speaks to releasing them. Do you think that's just kind of them posturing? Do you think it's actually going to, they're actually going to get released?
Well, the British government has all but completed what's going to turn out to be an 8-year campaign to release our files. The French government have released theirs. The U.S. government has released all the old Project Blue Book files from, I guess, the 60s, 50s and 60s. But conspiracy theorists say that there must be more. And I think that's what Hillary Clinton has said. What is there in the files that we haven't seen? Is there anything going on at the infamous Area 51? And she's promised to take another look. Bill Clinton had a look when he was president. He said he didn't find anything. Hillary's going to have another go, and good luck to her.
Yeah. Do you think that if they are out there, they can hear us talking about them right now?
Yes. I mean, literally, we have been a detectable civilization for decades precisely through our television and our radio broadcasts. And I know it's an old cliche about aliens listening to old reruns of I Love Lucy or whatever, but yeah, absolutely. This radio program, this very discussion, is leaking out now into the cosmos.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, I heard that aliens love sound sessions. They've been giving us really good feedback on our interviews so far. So,
yeah, good feedback. Yeah. So I guess my last question for you here is, if they do exist, should we be worried? Do you think they're peaceful? What should we expect?
If they really did have hostile intent, pretty much, despite what you see in the Hollywood sci-fi movies, there's probably nothing we could do about it. So I think keep your fingers crossed, hope they're friendly. And actually, if we did discover extraterrestrial life, or rather, if they discovered us, I think it could be the most interesting scientific discovery of all time, and it could change almost every aspect of our life here on Earth. I mean, think, for example, about access to extraterrestrial technology, what that might mean.
Oh, man, I can't wait to get that new iPod so much. Hey, Nick, thank you so much for joining us today on Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. Where can we find your works? Where can we reach out to you if we have any more questions?
My website is nickpope.net. Lots of information about my government work, my books, how to contact me, etc.
And that is Nick Pope, who ran the British government's UFO project and is now recognized as one of the world's leading experts on UFOs. Nick, thank you so much for sending this information to us.
Thank you.
That was fantastic.
Really interesting stuff.
What a world that is open, like when you think about the fact that, you know, aliens could be around.
Well, I was telling you earlier off the air when we were prepping for this, I you know, sometimes humans are just funny creatures to begin with, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you see an individual walking down the street and it doesn't look human.
Yeah, and then you know you gotta understand, like, there's some people who give you kind of like a weird eye, or what are they looking at? Are they studying me for maybe like abduction or something like that?
Taking like visual DNA samples? I don't know. Who knows what's going on?
You know, it was all about Men in Black that really turned my whole like world upside down when I'm like, oh, they can actually do that? Okay, wait, they're taking over.
But now, oh, and I should have asked him that. I totally forgot. But there's been reports of these Men in Black popping up on like country roads lately.
Really?
Yeah, and there's no explanation for it.
You know, there's a lot of weird stuff that's going on. We should, when we come back here on WGN one of these days, we should really look into these conspiracies and everything like that.
Because
I find it so interesting.
I really do too. I eat it up, honestly. But we're 2/3 of the way through, Michael.
We are rolling through it. This is what happens when we start talking on these microphones, Kevin.
when we start talking about aliens. So what do we got coming up? We're going to talk Malort after the top of the hour here.
We are. It's a hipster's paradise. This is one of the best alcohol in Chicago.
Is it?
It's from the city. We're going to find out, and the person to help us find out is Sam Meshlin.
Roger, are you familiar with Malort?
I have not personally tasted it, but I know my son has in his travels working in restaurants, and we have a team on our bowling league that their name is Malort.
I love that.
And
what have you heard about it?
I've heard that it is some very, how do I put this nicely, foul-tasting liqueur of some type.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, it's
okay.
It endears itself to you. Well, we have the expert coming in, Sam Meshlin, after the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. Again, you can reach us at 312-981-7200. You can call or text that. We're on Twitter at SoundSeshPod, Instagram, SoundSessionsWGN. We're on Facebook. We're on WGNplus.com. And you can email us at SoundSessionsPod@gmail.com. Sound Sessions on WGN.
I love this song.
Jepsen.
That is right. That is Archie Powell and the Exports singing the Jeffson's Malort theme song, basically. Now, if you haven't heard of this alcohol, you need to, first of all, try it. Give it to a surprising friend, or just, you know, buy yourself a bottle. Kevin, have you had any experience with this alcohol?
Yeah, I have. I celebrated the Chicago Blackhawks 2013 victory. First thing I did was went and got a shot of Malort.
Well, you know, there's nothing more Chicagoan than you can do than that.
Absolutely.
This alcohol has taken Chicago by storm, and we have the director of marketing, the man himself, Sam Meckling of Jepson's Malort. How's it going, Sam?
Awesome, man. Glad to be here tonight.
Oh, we are glad to have you. I mean, so let's start with the folklore behind this alcohol. Never before have I seen such a storied past come from a certain amount of alcohol. Where did it get its start? Why is it on the rise? What's happening?
Yeah, it's got like a cult-like following, it seems, right now.
It definitely is. I mean, like, in terms of things that have just never gone away, Malort came to Chicago in the early 1900s, and a guy named Carl Jepson was selling the stuff door-to-door. Like, he kind of sold it as medicine. Lo and behold, here comes Prohibition. All of a sudden, alcohol is illegal. But there was this little nice little loophole called the medicinal alcohol provision. And basically, he could sell it at any bar, any liquor store, if he could prove that it was medicinal, right? So who do you really have regulate that? So the feds would come to the distillery with their fire axes, and they would say, you know, is your product delicious? If it is, it's going to be labeled as recreational. They're going to break all the barrels and pour it down the storm drain. Mm-hmm. And of course they would drink the Malort, and they would be well satisfied that this stuff was not to be consumed by anyone sane enough. And so, like, that's how it was until after Prohibition. But after that, you could go into Walgreens and buy whiskey if you wanted, but Malort in that time had become kind of woven into the culture, and it just exists, you know, because it's part of our initiations and all that stuff.
So back when it was treated as a medicine, what was it meant to treat?
Okay, this is fun. So, like, the only ingredient in Malort, basically in terms of the flavor of it, is wormwood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So wormwood gets its name from the fact that it can kill tapeworms. So, like, back in the day,
wow.
you'd be eating, like, you know, undercooked meat. It was pretty common, and you would get, like, tapeworms.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you start losing weight. Everyone would wonder why. It's because there's something living in your stomach that was kind of taking half your plate with it. So a shot of Malort, maybe 15 shots, 30 shots, whatever it took, would be enough to kill the tapeworm and kind of either save your life or save your family from wasting all this food on something that wasn't you. So.
Now, oh, sorry, not to cut you off.
No.
You mentioned, you know, the firefighters and all them, they would get a taste of it. Was it? Did they alter the taste to make it worse, or has it just always been?
No. We are literally, like, it's not like we, like, sat down and tried to formulate the worst tasting thing on the world. It's just wormwood was a very kind of mythical, very biblical type of folk medicine, mm-hmm. and that's the only thing that's in our spirit, really. So that's just stuck to our guns on that. It just so happens to be just mind-bendingly difficult to enjoy, but but that's kind of why it's cool, because those people that like it are part of a very rarefied group, you know. It's very exclusive, yeah.
You know, for me, it sounds like this would be something that's kind of hard to sell, to be honest. How did you get your start with this company?
Okay, I'll give you kind of the dime store version. So basically, I'm a comic, and I do tell stories on stage and all that stuff. And we were running a show where we were asking members of the crowd to describe Malort as best they could, and we were giving out free shots to everybody. And we had these note cards with these descriptions that were just the funniest things we could ever think of. Like, I had one of them that was like, Malort tastes like your grandmother's luggage. You know, Malort tastes like driving through the steel part of Gary, Indiana with your mouth open in a convertible. We heard all sorts of stuff. It made me laugh really hard. And so I had this stack of note cards, and I didn't know what to do with it. So I tried to bring it to the company, and I never heard back from them. I never really heard anything about it. And so I decided to make a Twitter feed, basically, where a bottle of Malort would speak in the third person and say, I taste like, you know, a baby aspirin wrapped in grapefruit,
the
bound
most
in rubber bands.
I've heard is, you know, off deep woods.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes like that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're spraying yourself down before a fishing trip, some lands on your tongue and all that. And so, like, this became kind of a thing, and the Onion AV Club picked it up, and a few other local magazines picked it up. And it got so big that the owner of the company, Patricia, my boss, found out about it and kind of hunted me down in the best way. And rather than sue me, she decided it would be better off just to hire me instead. So it's a really, really strange story, but it turned out great.
It seems to be working out for you,
absolutely.
Too.
Yeah, she's great.
Do you like Malort?
Here's the thing I'll say about Malort. Now, that seems like a qualifier, but I love Malort. I drink it when no one's watching. That's kind of the thing. It's like there's people that drink it when people are watching, people mm-hmm. that don't. And so, like, I drink it when no one's watching. But, you know, every time I do a shot of Malort, it does freak me out a little bit. But it's like your favorite horror movie. The day you watch it and it doesn't scare you is a really sad day. And Malort is that horror movie that scares me every time, and I love that about it. It's always catching me off guard.
It makes you feel alive.
Yeah, it really does.
Do people still use it as a medicine? I see that some articles arising that they're using it for more than just, you know, the tapeworm epidemic.
Yeah, depending on what neighborhood you go to, you see people that drink it as kind of a Sunday morning hangover cure. And while we can't back that up or verify that, I know there are some bodegas that have it stacked 3 wide, 12 deep. Mm-hmm. And on Sunday morning, they got a guy out there with a box, with a box cutter open, stacking it and all that stuff. So it is kind of perceived in some circles as a hangover cure. But bitter is good for stomach aches. That's why ginger ale is good, or bitters or something like that. It kind of quells the queasiness, you know. Mm-hmm.
So let's fast forward to now. How does it all of a sudden have this cult-like following? When did it get its resurgence?
Exactly.
It's really hard to kind of pinpoint the exact moment, but a pretty easy one is there's a guy, he's a humorist called John Hodgman. Most people know him as there was the Mac versus PC ad campaign for Macintosh. He was the PC, kind of the straight-laced guy, you know, with like the gray suit and the glasses. He was a Daily Show correspondent, and he was doing these shows in Chicago, and he would start the show, crack two necks of two bottles of Malort, put them in the crowd and say, I'm not going to end the show until both bottles come back to the stage empty and all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
And he had a really big public voice, and he really kind of made Malort and comedy kind of intertwined, and that's what got me involved, and that's kind of the start of the whole thing off.
That's so great. You know, what I really like about it, too, is the logo is so Chicago.
Yeah, I do
like
love
the
that.
Brand.
Where did that
logo come from?
So, you know, I might be wrong here, but there was a liquor company that made Malort a while back, and I believe it was Beelzoff. So Beelzoff, they were very Chicago. They made creme de menthe. They made all sorts of stuff. And so they had the logo that had the three stars on it. You know, now everyone's like, well, the Chicago flag has four stars on it. But the fact of the matter is we are so freaking old mm-hmm. that we only have three stars because the event that inspired the fourth star had not occurred yet. So our flag has just three. That's kind of like a time stamp on the fact that we're older than 1934.
That's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, is there, like, I don't know if there's, you know, like some drinks have a certain thing you say as you cheers or things like that. Is there any ritual?
Like
or,
a slancha or like something.
Salud,
like that.
Yeah.
There's a few. I mean, like, if you look at Swedish culture, there's one. It's just basically skull, alcohol, which basically means cheers, cheers, alcohol. It's really funny. I mean, the Swedes as a whole, if you look at the per capita, I think, I could be wrong, but I believe that each individual in Sweden that's of drinking age consumes like 8 liters of alcohol per year of hard spirits. That might not sound like that much, but that's every man, basically woman, and kind of child. So that's a lot. They love hard alcohol. They drink it before dinner, during dinner, after dinner, you know, before they go to bed, when they wake up. You know, they're big into hard alcohol. Yeah.
That is so great. You know, I see in the Allstate Showcase studio here that we have the cops here. They must know you're here, Sam.
Yeah, I know. I can see.
Get them out of here.
So the cool thing about this Malort is how it comes to be. It's a kind of a surprise thing. Yeah. Like when you're with a friend who hasn't had it before, they must take a shot of
Malort. Oh, yeah. It's become a rite of passage, like a Chicago rite of passage, it seems.
It is. I mean, like, you know, this is one of the greatest cities in the world, if not the best city in the world. Mm-hmm. But we do have harsh winters. You know, sometimes it gets a little weird here. You know, and so like when someone moves out here, you want to make sure they've got what it takes to make it. And so a shot of Malort, if they can take it with, you know, confidence and, you know, kind of get through it, you know, they're going to be okay. But if they do it and they wince and they walk away, you're like, you know, better time to go back to Kansas for you. You know?
it's such a great way to, you know, put the hair on your chest almost.
Or it off, depending.
Yeah,
on
one of the two, yeah.
Well, Sam, we'd love for you to stick around for this next segment. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to look at the history of Malort. We're also going to look at the recent Twitter phenomenon of the Malort face. And our own Kevin Richter will be taking a shot.
Yeah.
Of this.
Can't wait. Of course.
So we will be back here on Sound Sessions on WGN Radio.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. This is Kevin Richter and Michael Heidemann here. Hey, Michael.
Hey, what's going on, Kevin?
And we are lucky to be joined in the studio by Director of Marketing for Jepson's Malort, Sam Mickling. Sam, thank you for being here. Oh, I guess I should turn your mic on. Thank you again. So,
glad to be here.
You were just telling us off the air, and this has actually kind of shocked me. For this being as big as it is in Chicago, it's not made in Chicago.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that makes the Malort story so crazy is that everyone finds out that we've been made in Florida for a little while, and they're like, oh, you guys do it, you know, because you got so big, and the answer is that we're not big. But all the distilleries in Chicago basically closed the doors in the mid-'80s, and we basically moved to Florida to kind of save the company. And the fact of the matter is, Wormwood was illegal in the United States up until 2008.
Why?
It was kind of like Wormwood was framed as being kind of a poisonous thing, but the fact of the matter is they used to use heavy metals to color the absinthe green.
Okay.
So they would use copper and all that stuff, and that might have been what made, you know, Van Gogh go nuts and kind of do what
sure.
he did. And so Wormwood was kind of had a PR problem, you know. And so Florida Distillers and Auburndale, God bless them, were the only people that were willing to make Malort because, you know, it's Florida and they have kind of a flexible view of the
Anything
law sometimes.
Goes in Florida.
I think so, given the news stories and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Florida. You know, and so, like, it's been made there for quite some time and they do a really good job for us, but it's in our minds at some point to bring it back to Chicago. We're kind of talking that through with a couple people, and it's something we'd love to do one day.
Do you have – is it vastly consumed in Florida, as vastly as it is here? Or?
That's the craziest part is it's made in Florida, boxed up, taped up, put in a truck, and it doesn't see the light of day until it hits the warehouse at Works
wow.
Beverage. So it's one of those things that is made in Florida, and there's a brewery down there called Cigar City. They make a cider in the same facility that we make our Malort. They know about it, but other than that, it's really a really closely guarded secret.
That's so funny.
You know, there is nothing more Chicagoan than Malort, and it would be made in Florida and then just hidden just for our own
yeah,
liking.
Yeah, it's very clandestine. I like it.
You know
it,
what's funny? It's like the opposite of how Chicagoans live. It's like, you know, Chicagoans retire in Florida, and this is the inverse.
And it's almost like takes it back to the Prohibition days where they're just like, you know, we've got a lot of stash here in Florida. Malort, don't tell anybody we're shipping it over lines to Chicago again. You know, another cool thing about this is the fact that it just has become such a viral sensation. It's been featured on BuzzFeed, Flickr, YouTube, Thrillist.
Yeah, I mean, Thrillist is great, yeah.
There aren't – it's touched every single news outlet that there is. And the thing that I kind of enjoy watching, especially if you look it up on Google, is the fact that there is some – viral craze called Malort face.
Yes.
Sam, could you talk a little bit about this Malort face?
So that was the first thing that I saw when I was kind of like staking out the company, seeing what their social media program was. There was a Flickr pool. Flickr is like an image sharing site. And they had this image pool with like thousands of pictures of people's first Malort shot and their reaction and their face. And some of these pictures are just like spit out your coffee funny. Like these people, like their faces are turning inside out. It's moms, dads, grandpa, grandma, just people just getting absolutely destroyed. And some of the, you know, it's one of the best things to look at in the world. And that was very shareable. It was very funny. And I saw something in the reaction of Malort. And that's the social experiment of Malort. You got a buddy that's never been in Chicago before. You give him a shot and you just sit there with your chin resting on your knuckles watching him, just seeing what he'll do. And that was such a fun experiment. That's what's so viral about it. Not just in the internet, but in a bar. You'll see someone that gets a shot of Malort and they make a face and they're mad about it. But you see them dragging their buddies to the bar at another table, and that's how it spreads. It's word of mouth. It's just the curiosity of seeing the reaction that makes it really work.
So funny. Now, I have had, and I can't name specific brands or anything, but I have had another variety or two of Malort, and they're a little bit different. And a buddy of mine makes cocktails with them, actually, and it turned out pretty well, surprisingly.
Is it called Malort? Because I know that's a specific
they,
time.
At one point, they were. Now, like, they've got different names. The one from Leatherby, which is really interesting, is called Besk, which is the Swedish style of the liqueur, which is actually very correct on the back end. And then there's another one from Few that's called Anguish and Regret, which is very, very accurately named as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, though. So, yeah, it seems like they are not as potent. Tasting, not potent. I mean, you get what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like the aim with Malort is to have impact, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, to make a Malort that kind of is palatable is like having a heavy metal band that's played at like 4 on the knob. You know what I mean? Like, we go to 11. That's what we do.
You know? I love that. Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up too. Is Malort, I mean, you just said it. It's intentionally in your face,
right? And so, like, you know, we as a company strive to have the strongest product possible. And so we had a batch come out maybe about 2 years ago, and we always stress out about the product because it's the same amount of the weed that goes into the actual batch, but it's how angry the weed is, you know what I mean? And we got a sample bottle from the distillery, and me and my boss were sitting in her condo, and we were stressing out. We're like, oh man, what's this gonna be like? And she poured me a shot, you know, her hand was shaking, she was so nervous, and I drank the shot, and she looked at me and she goes, how is it? And I go, my God, it's so awful. And she's like, thank God. Thank God. We, you know, cracked a bottle of champagne after that. That's what we want.
I just love that it's we love to hate it, I guess, is what it is. You know what I mean? It's so funny. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, going along the theme of the show, is Chicago's a community, and also there are no guilty pleasures.
Nope.
This is the one thing that you don't need to feel guilty about.
Yeah, I don't know if I can get pleasure out of it. I get a weird sense of twisted pleasure out of it.
It's
I guess
a sadist thing, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So what's next for Jepson's Malort?
I don't know. We got a lot of things kind of in the hopper. You know, we always want to go to new markets. The fact, you know, there's people out there that we call Malort fans that just don't know it yet, you know. And, you know, you always give the guy a first shot of Malort and you see his eyes light up. We just want to go to other places and see those people experience the thing. You know, we don't want to give it to everybody. That's the thing. You know, they have to earn it. They have to ask for it. They have to email us and badger us. And we want to, but we don't want to just sell ourselves out and just give it to everybody. So New Orleans is a town full of the weirdest, most amazing original people in the world. They're asking for it. San Francisco, big cocktail culture. They love Fernet. And there's a lot of expats from Chicago there. So just kind of places we're poking around. Love to go.
That's awesome. And Sam, how about you yourself? What do you have next on the plate? Because I know you're a comedian. You work in a few bars here in Chicago. What do you got next on your plate?
Well, we want to eventually do a Malort commercial. And so, like, you know, whether this is on TV or on YouTube or whatever it is, we want it to be kind of the scene in Willy Wonka when he opens the door and they walk, you know, land of pure imagination. You got, like, the mushrooms and all that stuff. But it's just basically just it looks like people just screaming and running around. wiping off their tongue with a napkin. So, like, I want to do a commercial that kind of pulls the curtain away from what our process is and all that stuff. That would be great to do. I'd love to do that.
That's hilarious.
That's so cool. So I guess with that, we should take our climactic.
I know.
Should we do this? Shantae, are you taking this? She doesn't drink. Okay.
We are all taking a shot, except for Shantae, of the famous Jepson's
Malort. What was the say?
Skull alcohol.
Skull alcohol.
All right.
Here we go, boys.
Cheers, boys.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin looks like he's crying right now.
That was a right batch.
Sam looks cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm hanging in there. I've said that oh, wow, that's a good batch. It makes people's chin disappear, I've seen. They kind of recoil in horror. So it'd be very hard to, like, fold a blanket after doing a shot of Malort. You know, you couldn't get it under your chin.
Do you remember those commercials? Oh, boy, maybe 10 years ago. It was a beer commercial. I want to say it was for Beck's or something like that.
It was a bitter
yeah.
beer face.
Yes.
That was for Keystone Light, believe it
was
or not.
It, really?
It was, because they said it's a no-bitter beer because it had a specially lined can. And we all laughed, like, that
right.
seems dumb, but now every craft brewery uses that special line can.
No
that's kidding. That's why cans are so popular now, is because they don't leave the metallic residue on the flavor. So, yeah, laughs on us, I guess.
Point being, that's what I feel like this does to me. It's
yes.
the bitter beer face.
Yep.
Big time.
The man with no teeth who's like, yes. lip would fold over. Yeah.
Where can people, if they want to put themselves through some torture in a good way, where can they get some alert?
So, first, if you're in Chicago, just go to any Binny's location. You know, they're everywhere. But beyond that, go to malortmap.com, type in your address, and it'll drop a pin on the map and show every bar and every liquor store that's around you. So really easy to do.
Awesome. Fantastic. And for all the fans out there, we actually have some Malort swag to give away
today. Yeah.
What do we got here, Sam?
So we've got a kind of a smattering of stuff. We've got some patches that aren't even on the market yet. These are like super limited. We've got a beanie, T-shirts, a hoodie, and we've got a book written by a guy named Jeff Cialetti. It's called The Year of Drinking Adventurously. This guy went gonzo style, went to every city in America, basically, and explored every local drinking culture. This guy, like, literally put his liver on the line to create a really great book, and there's a whole chapter on Malort there. We'd love to send it out.
Wow. Go ahead.
I wanted to ask if he sponsors the bowling team, the Malort Madmen.
This is a good reach out, I think. I think we can. Let's do it on the air. Let's say yes.
Okay. I will talk to him. We'll start the season up a little towards the end of August. I'll get him in touch with you.
Love that.
That's great.
Great.
Malort bringing people together.
Yeah.
and tearing families apart at the same time, probably.
Michael, do you remember your first shot of Malort?
I do, in fact. I do remember it. It was at this bar called Beauty Bar here in Chicago.
I know it. Yes. I know Beauty Bar.
And I was with I was trying to impress this girl that we were kind of like dancing and stuff like that. And then she goes, will you buy me a shot? And I go to the bartender. I go, hey, buddy.
Don't tell me you got her a shot of Malort.
I said.
Inadvertently.
I go, what's the cheapest shot you got? And he goes, well, I have this thing called Malort. And I go, oh, Malort. Sounds fancy. Sounds pretty good.
There's an umlaut? Oh, yeah.
the umlaut really speaks a lot loudly to me. Because I was like, oh, fancy writing. Nice label. So anyway, I give her the shot and she goes, oh. What was this? I didn't tell her what it was because I wanted to like keep it a surprise. I thought it was going to taste like, you know, flowers. Everyone mm-hmm. kept saying it tasted so good. And
yeah, the flower they have at the conservatory that flowers every 100
yes.
years.
Yeah.
the corpse
dead.
Flower, yeah.
So we're taking this shot, and of course, she almost spits it out of her mouth. She goes, I didn't know you wanted to give me Malort. Lo and behold, I haven't talked to her since.
Oh, man.
Sam, what about you? Do you remember yours?
So my first shot of Malort was probably, I've got it narrowed down to a place called L&L. It was right at Clark in Belmont. You know, it's a pretty gnarly neighborhood.
Oh, I know it. Great bar.
Yeah, great bar. I have a really good Irish whiskey selection, too. But so, like, I was there, and I was with my buddy, and he says, I have a shot that I can give you that tastes like that drawer in your mom's kitchen that has all the pencils and rubber bands and thumbtacks and pennies in it. And it's like someone poured a bottle of vodka in there and swished it around like a gold miner's pan, you know? And I'm like, I need that right now.
Yeah.
And I did a shot. And I almost took the bottle from the bartender because I thought I'd never be able to find it again.
That's so funny.
I did.
I think my first one was either at Quenchers
or
at the Bob Inn.
Those are both very likely, yeah.
And I knew what I was getting myself into, too. I had heard about the legend of it. And, you know, I went for it, and it was worse than I expected.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
That's the
what we
love
want.
Of it. Yeah, exactly. So what we're going to do is we will take some callers. Give us your favorite Malort story or text us your favorite Malort story. We'll read them on air, and we will get you out some of that swag. Sam Mackling from Jepson's Malort, thank you so much for joining us, Sam.
It's awesome. Thanks for being around.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. I am Michael Heidemann, and I'm here with my buddy Kevin Richter. We have some great Malort stories. We are here with Sam Mackling, the brand ambassador, director of marketing, just the all things Malort guy.
The Malort man.
And we want to get...
Voldemort, I've heard before.
Oh, I like it. I like it.
These who shall not be named. we have some fantastic, fantastic texts about your favorite Malort story or your first time you tried this from the 815 area code. Someone gave me a swig. Thought it was rancid foo-foo coffee, dry heaves after. That's Mark from Rockford. Thank you so much. And we've
We got a couple calls lined up, it looks like.
Oh, let's hear. Let's take some of them.
Let's go to Joel here. Joel with an L, not Joe. Hey, Joel.
Yes, sir. How are you this morning?
Good. Thanks for calling.
What's going on, Joel?
You got a Malort story for us?
Well, yes, I do. I'm in my mid-50s now. I'll try to make this as quick as possible. I've been up all night working. But anyway, a friend of mine who owned a bar, he's recently retired in Berwyn, Illinois, Swenguli's good old town. Mm-hmm. He used to get a kick out of whenever it was his birthday or a special occasion, he would pull out a bottle of Malort. He was the only one that drank it. He was the purveyor of this pub. And it'd be all covered in dust. And I don't know how much of that he drank at his time, but he would get such a charge out of whoever took a shot with him because they wouldn't know what to expect. And I remember it from years ago. It was a very twisted, a unique concoction, almost kind of like a weird cinnamon flavor that kind of went wrong.
Yes,
it was really quite humorous to see people's faces when they took a shot of that.
Hey, Joel, I will say this much. Malort is kind of like the opposite of wine. The longer you let it sit out to kind of decant in the air, the more horrible it becomes. So a bottle that has dust on it, that is perfectly ripened. So hats off to your friend for doing it right, man. It's great.
I have a question for you, if you don't mind. He's Please. Retired now, and he's up there in his 70s. Is there a chance of getting a T-shirt sent out to me so I could surprise him and bring it over to his house?
Absolutely. Just name the size. We got it.
Okay, of course. I'll hang on.
Why don't we have...
do it off the air then. Yeah,
Shantae will get your info off the air. We'll put you on hold here, okay? Stay on the line here, Joel.
Yeah, thanks, Joel.
All right, we have our next caller coming in. It's Joe who has a Malort story.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Perfect.
All right, Joe, hit us with your Malort story.
So we used to go to this one place in Wisconsin. It was called Mad Dance. And we had just a great time up there constantly. And night after night, and it was either that or we'd have ginger-flavored brandy. And I think ginger-flavored brandy even beat out Malort most nights.
That's their challenge shot up there for sure.
But, that was a great story. But, that was back when it was 21. You had to be 21 to drink in Illinois. And
I think that's still the rules.
To the border.
yeah, that still stands.
Well, up there, it was always 18, so you could go.
Oh, nice.
Right. Joe, you got to stop putting yourself through this pain, man.
I know it. Well, anything. It's better in Florida here.
Right on. All right, so let's put you on hold real quick.
We'll put you on hold. I think Shantae will get your info also. Thank you, Joe.
Bye.
Awesome. Well, great stories, Sam. Thank you so much for joining us. What a treat this has been.
Awesome. It's been so fun. Yeah, thanks, dudes.
So I think, are we moving on to Butch Vig here?
Yeah, we have the excellent opportunity to talk to one of the biggest names in production. I mean, being producers ourselves, this guy is an idol of ours. In fact, he was able to produce albums such as Nirvana's Nevermind, which really put them on the map.
I was going to say, I feel like he really did put Nirvana, like he had his
Absolutely.
Hand in putting Nirvana on the map. What else? He's done Green Day, he's done
Foo Fighters.
Everything, every big band, you name it. And he's also the drummer of Garbage. So we caught up with Butch Vig a few weeks ago, and he had this to say.
Hey, this is Butch Vig from Garbage, and you're listening to Sound Sessions. I'm only happy when it rains.
Welcome to another episode of Sound Sessions here at WGN Radio. Today we are joined by super producer and music virtuoso Butch Vig of the band Garbage. They have a new album out with Strange Little Birds, and we welcome Butch Vig. How's it going, Butch?
It's going pretty well.
Excellent, excellent.
Hey, Butch, this is Kevin. Such an honor to speak with you, first of all. You are just a legend in the industry, so we really appreciate you joining us. So I wanted to get into, you just told us, or you have a record that just came out. Maybe, I don't want to give anything away, maybe more music coming. You're on another tour coming up here. How does Garbage and how does Butch Vig keep on doing what they're doing?
Well, I mean, we really dug deep into recording Strange Little Birds. It was quite an experience for the four of us in Garbage. I think we felt really free doing it at this point, being on our own label. You know, there's really no one looking over our backs or putting pressure on us except ourselves. And we made a fairly dark, cinematic-sounding record, and it kind of inspired us to even go into some further U-turn directions, I think, on the next record. So we're going to be touring on and off this whole year, but I think we're going to make another record. We're already talking about some of the ideas for it.
You know, that's so great, and being such like a super producer and, you know, being in all these groups and having such like a wealth of knowledge and influence in the music industry, where do you find the inspiration to write and record this music? Is the best place still in your basement or in your bedroom, or are you still finding more inspiration in the studio nowadays?
Well, we recorded a lot of Strange Little Birds at my home studio, which is basically a glorified bedroom studio. There's really no soundproofing, and I have to pick moments when I can play drums where we can turn the amps up, because there's, you know, the neighbors complain if it's too late at night. So
we
try to record from around 11 a.m. until around dinner time, when I see some of the neighbors showing up, then we try to tone it down a little bit. But it's kept it very relaxed recording here, you know, you never feel like there's any clock ticking or any pressure. So it really gives us a lot of freedom to experiment a lot and try a lot of different ideas. And if they don't work out, we just can them and, you know, and move on to something else. And I know it was very liberating for Cheryl, especially. She felt like she could just be very spontaneous with her writing. And we tried to be what she terms less fussy, you know, just record things and kind of leave them where they're at and not go back and manipulate them or redo them or rework them. And so I think it was good. We finished Strange Little Birds at our engineer Billy Bush studio in Atwater Red Ridge, and that's a proper studio. It's a great mix room and a little overdub room, and it's soundproofed, and, you know, we can go and work really long hours there. But the bulk of Strange Little Birds was done here, sitting looking over Silver Lake.
Excellent. Now, I want to know, being a producer and also playing drums in Garbage, and I'm assuming you're kind of doing both, you're wearing both hats, is that, what's that like for you? Is that exhausting, or is it something you really kind of thrive on?
It's interesting, because I definitely wear two different hats. When I'm producing someone like the Foo Fighters or Green Day or Against Me or whoever, it's my job to remember it's their vision, and I really need to help them find their vision and get great performances and help them with the songs. But at the end of the day, it's their music, and in Garbage, it's my music and my band or our music, and I can write a song, I can play drums, I can engineer, I can produce, I can play guitar, keyboards. All of us have a lot of different roles that we play in Garbage, and I think because of that sort of creative freedom, that's one of the things that's kept us together for 20 years.
That's so true. You know, you're also a fellow Midwestern boy yourself, and I really enjoy that about, you know, you feel some kind of pride when you see somebody from the Midwest grow to the ranks that you do. And I always wanted to know, being a fan of yours for quite some time now, why didn't you take your creative spirit to somewhere like L.A. or New York? What made you stay in the homestead in Madison, Wisconsin?
You know, I had a lot of offers to move to L.A. or New York or London and set up a studio and really work with only big time clients is what some of the potential managers told me back in the 90s, and I really didn't have any interest in doing that because I liked sort of being left to my own devices. I kind of felt like recording a lot in Madison, which is my, you know, Smart Studios is my primary recording studio for many years.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just you're left alone. You're off the beaten track. It's not easy to get to if you're from New York or L.A. And so it just gives you kind of more creative freedom in a way where you don't start second guessing yourself, or you start getting a lot of outside opinions. And I always thought it was healthy to be in the Midwest. You know, to kind of, like I said, be left to our own devices.
I kind of want to talk about that. You mentioned, you know, you were getting all these offers to go out west. First, can you speak to kind of how you've gotten to where you are? You know, I read that, and it's obvious the hard work is in your blood, but you opened up Smart Studios, you were driving a cab, you were playing in Spooner, and now you fast forward and you're recording some of these huge bands, you're in a huge band yourself. How have you gotten to where you are right now, being a sought-out name in the industry? And I guess also maybe you could speak to a way that you have found to stand out in the industry.
Well, I think one of the reasons I've been successful is I've been very lucky that I've worked with some amazing artists. You know, you're only as good as the artist is really in their songs. I was lucky to develop really strong relationships with people like Billy Corgan, you know, where I really pushed him and he pushed me right back, and we tried to really raise the bar on recording, especially when we did Siamese Dream. You know, we had a vision in our heads and
great album.
Practically killed each other getting there, but in the end, it was worth it. And I don't know. I mean, I've always had a fairly strong work ethic. I guess I probably got that from my dad. I mean, they say there's sort of that stoic Midwestern work vibe, but it's somewhat true, at least for me. You know, I didn't really have a lot of hobbies. I just consider music my main love of life, other than my family. And I throw myself into it all the time. It doesn't matter what kind of project it is. I get obsessed with it, and I think that's really how you have to approach it, your art. If you really want to be successful at it, you just have to immerse yourself in it 100%.
Sure. And it almost sounded like you were selling yourself short. You said, you know, you've been lucky that these bands have come to you, but it's obvious that there's a reason that these bands came to and continue to come to you, you know?
Well, part of that is, I think I'm also easygoing, and that's also from my Midwest upbringing. So
sure.
It's easy to, I've always had a really good rapport with the bands I produced, and I think I'm able to push them and get things out of them with a non-confrontational way, and so they feel good about what they're doing. And I mean, sometimes making records or recording a song can be very difficult, and there's a lot of obstacles you have to overcome. And I think half of that battle is psychological. It's not just the snare drum sound or the tone of the
sure.
guitar. It's trying to get the right performances. I've been very good at getting into bands' heads and from the psychological aspect and getting them to feel comfortable. You know, I think that's a big, big part of what I do.
That's a really good point because they're
really interesting.
There is a lot of, you know, I don't want to say it, but ego when it comes to writing music. And, you know, a lot of people take personal personal care of their own sound. And, you know, I've heard and read in interviews that you've done that, you know, you were with bands and you were doing hundreds and hundreds of overdubs and re-recording of instruments and just constant back and forth. How do you kind of, you know, is it the Midwestern charm or what's the other secret that comes to, you know, controlling and containing that kind of attitude when it comes to putting out a good album? Because I feel like if, you know, you were in a fight with a band or if there was, you know, a clash between producers and stuff, it could be seen on the album, not coming through. But all your albums have this kind of warm and well-calculated feeling. So how do you control those artists and push them to make the best music that they can make?
Well, this kind of goes to what I said before. It's up to me to sort of understand their vision, and then I have to get them comfortable so they'll listen to some outside opinions. And you know, hopefully when I suggest something, they're going to listen to it because they trust me at that point. And trust me, I've been in some huge battles in the studio, and many I've won and many I've lost. And I usually try to – the ones I need to win, I usually save up, and I'll let some of the smaller ones fall by the wayside if I think that they're –
pick your battles.
To keep count of who's winning what you know, what arguments. But at the end of the day, you know, a song has to sort of connect to a listener in an emotional way, whether it's the singing or the lyrics or the vibe or the groove of the track, or a combination of those things. And I always use a term called focus. It needs to be focused. Sometimes I think there's extraneous parts that don't need to be in there. You know, sometimes the performances don't feel right to me. And I've had bands at the 11th hour go back and recut a song in the context of a record because one or two of the tracks didn't sound like they felt good enough to me. And that's hard to do when you think you've already nailed something and then in hindsight you go, you know what, it could be better. And sometimes that's all I say is, you know what, that could be better. And then let the artist they think about go, you know what, it could be. Let's see if we can top it.
That's really interesting too. That's got to be tough too to say at times. But you know, working with the bands that you have, I guess it's you know you are
yeah like telling
at that level, right.
Telling Billy Corgan, you know that or, could be a little bit better if you right. just you know strum that.
But I want to know: are there any bands? Well, first of all, who are you listening to nowadays, and who are you kind of currently impressed by? And is there anyone that you haven't had the chance to work with that you would like to?
Oh God, there's so much great new music out there. I love Courtney Barnett's music. That came out last year.
Absolutely.
I like the new Beach House record.
Oh yeah.
I like Parquet Courts are awesome. They sort of remind me of a combination of the Pixies and Pavement, but they're a great punk rock band. There's so much great new music. I have a tendency to these days listen to a lot of like internet blog stations. I find that they're a lot of the really cool underground stuff is being played on the internet. You know, it's not necessarily filtered into mainstream radio. And there's just so much great music out there. You do have to weed through a lot of stuff sometimes to find tracks that you like. You know, there's way more music out available to the public now than there was 20 years ago, you know, just because it's easier to record on laptops and wherever, and a lot of young bands are way smarter about how to record. So if you're just searching for something new, like I said, you got to sometimes wade through a lot of stuff, a lot of music until you find something that you really fall in love with.
Absolutely. I want to know also, just maybe we can briefly speak on this, you know, since late in 2015 and up to now, we've had a lot of losses, big losses in the music industry, whether it be Bowie, Prince, Fife Dog, Lemmy. Had you ever had any experiences with any of these guys or had a chance to even have a conversation with any of them?
I met Lemmy years ago. I met Bowie. We played a garbage show with like a VH1 fashion show years ago. With Bowie, and just met him backstage, and he was super cool and super charming. We're all quite intimidated by him just because he's David Bowie, but he was really lovely when he came out and chatted with us. Years ago, I produced a band from Minneapolis, Sometimes Why, and I played drums on some of the tracks on the record. When they had a record release, we went up and they played a show at First Avenue, and after the show, Prince was there, and he said, hey, one of his crew guys came up and said, hey, can we use your drums? Prince wants to jam after the show. And I'm like, what? Sure. but then they kicked everybody out and made everybody come back in. There was a huge line to get in, and we never got back in until after the show to get my drums. So I actually didn't see him play.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But they did use my drum kit that night.
That's hilarious.
It's so wild. So, you know, another thing is we'll keep you with one last question here. Thank you again for joining us today. You know, growing up close to Chicago, there must have been some really great memories and obviously some great time spent here. What were some things that you still do when you come here and can even walk the streets now? Or what's some things you'd like to touch back onto when you come to the city of Chicago?
Well, I've played many, many shows there over the years. We were just back there a couple months ago. We had a party at the Metro for the Smart Studio Story documentary on our studio that's coming out this fall. And I love Joe Shanahan. I played there with my band Spooner, my band Firetown. I've been there with the Pumpkins and Nirvana. Garbage has played there a bunch of times. But there's a bunch of places in Chicago that we've played over the years. And the funniest thing is every time we're there, when we're rolling out of town in the bus or a van, we always stop at White Castle.
Yes.
Because it's been a tradition for over 20 years. So you just got to get a bag of sliders as you head out on the highway.
Oh, yeah.
It's meant to be. I love that. We're one and the same, yep. Butch. Well, you know, that was Butch.
Yeah.
That was Butch Vig. Be sure to check out Strange Little Birds and keep your eyes peeled for the Smart Studio documentary coming out this fall. Butch, it was an absolute pleasure having you on Sound Sessions today. Thank you again.
Right on. Thanks, you guys.
So there you have it. That was our interview with Butch Vig of Garbage and mega record producer. Just what an awesome guy.
Couldn't have been nicer, to be honest.
Yeah, so we got a little bit more left. We're going to say hi to Orion before we send things up to Roger. This is Sound Sessions on WGN. You have been listening to Sound Sessions on WGN Radio. I am Kevin Richter.
And I am Michael. And Kevin, how surreal is it to say that you've been listening to Sound Sessions on WGN?
This has been a treat. I want to say thank you to Roger, thank you to Shantae, thank you to you, Michael, thank you to Todd and Jimmy and Stephanie and everyone for giving us this opportunity. It's been so much fun.
Yeah, thank you so much to everybody listening, our friends, our family. We have John Bruner listening from France.
Yeah,
I mean,
how cool is that?
It's so awesome to be at this station, and we couldn't be more excited to just be here.
And just a reminder again, you can reach us on Twitter at SoundSeshPod, Instagram SoundSessions WGN. We're on Facebook. We're on WGNplus.com. You can email us SoundSessionsPod@gmail.com. I feel like you guys have a better idea of what we do now.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you see what we have going on. We have a lot of music-centric discussions. We have a lot of great interviews that we do. We love giving away tickets. In fact, we have those pair of tickets to Pitchfork. We have, as well as Chicago Open Air, which is an all-metal festival as well coming up. So reach out to us on our social media there. Subscribe to us on iTunes.
All of it, all of it, all of it, yeah.
Kevin, this is so surreal, man. I'm so glad that I got to work with you.
Yeah, I agree, buddy. Thank you so much for hanging out. And you know what else is surreal? We're going to have crosstalk with Orion Samuelson right now. Hi, Orion.
Good morning, and enjoyed hearing you for the last half hour this morning. I must admit, I did sleep in till 4:30 this
morning. Oh, he slept in this morning, Orion.
Well, you know, for 55 years, I have been getting up at 2:45 in the morning because I didn't want to spend the rest of my life on the dairy farm milking cows, getting up at 5 morning. So I left the dairy farm, became a broadcaster, and have been getting up at 2:45 in the morning ever since. That doesn't say much about what's happening upstairs here. So anyway, but yeah, enjoyed the little bit I heard.
You know, we were talking, Orion, off a little while ago before you had woken up about concerts we had seen with our family. What's the last concert you saw, Orion?
Probably the Ontario High School Marching Band back in 1951, yeah.
Wow, that long ago.
I like their stuff. Their early record was just fantastic.
Well, hey, I played the tuba in that band, so, you know, I was the only kid in the school. We had 23 in my graduating class. I was the only kid in the school big enough to carry the tuba and blow it in a parade, so.
Well, Orion, so fun talking to you on the Crosstalk. This
absolutely
is such a treat.
It's an honor, Orion.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for doing what you do, and I'll let you finish, and then I'll take over.